Introducing free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Well, we're going to try this one more time. This is the Tuesday, the 30th of March, year of our Lord, 2021, day 381 of America Held Hostage. It is a massive onslaught of propaganda that we're about to face. I'm going to show you the fear-mongering, the bad acting, and the bad information that is trying to push us very rapidly into vaccines and identity papers. Stay with us. All right, we had a technical glitch there. I hope we didn't lose our audience, but we're going to continue on with this one way or the other. Hopefully people realize that we're now back. I want to begin because we're going to be talking about the disinformation campaigns that are being pushed out. And, of course, it's not just what is going on with CNN and other people of that ilk. It is also the $250 million Ad Council campaign that is, channeling money to a lot of people. And it's also how the mainstream media is doing its own censoring, focusing on that. We have reporters like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi, who are focusing on the censorship and how journalists have now become not interested in exposing information that you need to know, but in terms of shutting down people who do expose that information. And so Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stones, Glenn Greenwald of, well, formerly of The Intercept. Sorry, got a swallowed some of my coffee here, down the wrong windpipe here. But Matt Taibbi, Rolling Stones, I disagree with him in terms of economics, but he has been spot on in terms of exposing abuses of the war on drugs, exposing the crime and corruption and money laundering of banks that are too big to jail, as HSBC was. That was his article, exposing multiple convictions of HSBC, given a pass by the Obama administration. And again, even though Matt Taibbi at Rolling Stones is someone who generally liked the social policies of Obama, he was not going to give them a pass when they did something like look the other way. These massive money laundering crimes for drug lords like the Sinaloa cartel, he pointed out in his paper how they had set up their own cash window for the Sinaloa drug cartel. And I talked to Everett Stern, who was a whistleblower, exposing the second round of money laundering done by HSBC, and how even after they'd been caught the first time, and fined, given a hand slap, they continued to set this up to do it a second time. So Matt Taibbi has been at the focus of real corruption, real government corruption, and he's not held hostage by his partisan loyalty, even to the politicians that he prefers, unlike many of our alternative media, as we see now. Very, very sad to see that happening with so many. And so he, like Glenn Greenwald, who was part of exposing the Ed Snowden leaks, has now been fired by The Intercept that he helped to found. And now the two of them are being attacked by the establishment mouthpieces who are not interested at all in questioning or exposing corruption from the establishment. As a matter of fact, they have now become the handmaidens, the propagandists for the establishment. Glenn Greenwald wrote about the hearing that we had last week. I've talked about this. The House Energy and Commerce Committee Thursday hearing, they had a five-hour interrogation of Silicon Valley CEOs. You had Zuckerberg, you had Dorsey, you had Sundar Pichai of Facebook, Twitter, and Google, respectively. And they were demanding that these people step up the censorship. These are the Democrats. As I pointed out, are the Republicans going to stand for a free speech after all of this interference in our election? After all of this interference in our fundamental rights on their public square? They've said their model is the public square. Their model is not a shopping mall. Their model is the digital public square. And we've already had Supreme Court decisions, but we can't pay attention to those. Supreme Court decisions are supposedly the law of the land. They modify the Constitution. You better not change them, except when it comes to something that supports our liberties, in which case we won't even talk about Marsh versus Alabama. But Glenn Greenwald said the hearing was at once agonizingly boring and frightening to speech advocates, filled with scenes of members of Congress demanding that monopolistic companies engage in draconian crackdowns. This is the article by Matt Tiabi on Zero Hedge via TK News. Greenwald pointed out one of the craziest exchanges involved a Texas Democrat, Lizzie Fletcher. Fletcher brought up the State Department's maintenance of a list of foreign terrorist organizations, and she praised the CEOs of Twitter and Facebook and Google, saying that by all accounts, your platforms do a better job of terrorist organizations, where that post is automatically removed with keywords or phrases, and those are designated by the State Department, quote unquote. Then she went further, and as Matt Tiabi pointed out, she chided the firms for not doing the same thing domestically. Would a federal standard for defining a domestic terror organization, similar to foreign terrorist organizations, help your platforms to better track and to remove harmful content? In other words, if we give you a list of keywords and phrases and organizations, would you get rid of those? If we tell you, you know, here's an individual, David Knight, we don't want you to allow any of his information out there. And the interesting thing I find is that as good as Tiabi and Greenwald have been in terms of promoting free speech, and as they see that this is an issue, they do not see Microsoft's CCPA. Huh, sounds like the Communist Chinese Party, right? Well, they called it C2PA because they don't want you to make that understanding, but that's exactly what Microsoft is doing, and they're doing this with the help of the State Department and the military-industrial complex and the so-called intelligence community. I like to just call it the CIA. Just include all that in there. Just call it the CIA. Include the NSA as part of the CIA, too. I don't care. I don't like intelligence community. CIA has a dirty ring to it, well-deserved with all their escapades for the last 60 years. They're the best known of these dirty domestic terrorists. They are the domestic terrorists. But they're going to be calling you the domestic terrorists. It's kind of like the fake news CNN calling everybody else fake news. Well, you're going to have the domestic terrorists, the CIA, who were set up to terrorize other countries, to start wars in other countries, to overthrow elections in other countries, to assassinate people in other countries. And then they started doing it here. And now they're openly doing it here. And now they have partners in the media that they can go to. And it's a revolving door, just like the pharmaceutical companies. If you're John Brennan or James Clapper, you can go openly talk all the time and get paid for it. On CNN and MSNBC, you can be a contributor. It's an open door, revolving door. Operation Mockingbird comes out of the closet. And so now they want to do the same thing because, you know, the weapons of war abroad become instruments of tyranny at home. And that's the way these empires always work. And this is a CIA empire, a CIA government, and it is now turning internally. And they see the speech part of this as journalists. But it's much bigger than this. Microsoft's Chinese Communist Party Act, what I like to call it, the CCPA, is going to allow them to digitally identify content, take it down to the individual. What was the computer that this was made on? So they brought in Intel and ARM, all the key CPU manufacturers. What software created this? So they work with Adobe and other software creators, so that if you make a meme or you make a document, a written document, article, or video or audio clip, they can identify what computer that came from, what individual that came from, and immediately keep it from being sent around the regular internet. We'll have to go to the dark web to get information like that. And, of course, they also ally themselves with the mainstream media. BBC, New York Times. These people who have been at the center of pushing lies and political agendas to you. BBC with its Building 7. It's going to fall, right? Or it did fall, right? 20 minutes before it did fall. They predicted, they said it had already fallen. And nothing had even happened to it. And then the New York Times, with one piece of garbage report after the other that they've had to return Pulitzer Prizes for. But now laying the foundation for what they're going to do to our society with the 1619 Project. But going back to Matt Taibbi's article about what happened, he said at another point, Fletcher noted that material from the January 6th protests had been taken down. She said, I think we can all understand some of the reasons for this, but will you commit to sharing the removed content with Congress so we can continue with the investigation? Taibbi comments, and again, Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald absolutely despise Trump and the MAGA movement. They understand the danger of this. He said, questions like Fletcher's suggest that Congress wants to create a multi-tiered informational system, one in which data transparency, quote-unquote, means sharing content with Congress, but not with the public. See, a journalist has always been interested in exposing the secrets of government, right? That's been one of the key things driving good journalists. But not anymore. No. We'll keep your secrets, and we will help you to find and to attack people. We will vilify them in the press as well for you. He said, worse, this is back to Taibbi, worse, they're seeking systems of quote-unquote responsible curation. That might mean private companies like Google enforcing government-created lists of bannable domestic organizations, which is pretty much the opposite of what the First Amendment intended. And he doesn't seem to be aware, as I said, that Microsoft is already laying the foundation for that with government grants. These people and Congress are laying the public relations foundation for this. See, we have to do this because of January the 6th, but they've been working on this since the mid-90s, actually longer than that, since the inception of the Internet. But it became practical in the mid-90s. The bandwidth issues made it practical. But it was always designed as a DARPA tool of psychological control. Taibbi, under the system favored by Fletcher and others, these monopolistic firms would target speakers as well as speech. Exactly right. Matt Stoller, Director of Research at the American Economic Liberties Project, puts it, he said, he describes how companies like Facebook make money. And what he's saying is, they don't really understand that this is operating against their business model. And so listen to their business model. And this is one of the reasons why George Gilder believes that the days of Google are numbered. I hope he's right. But I suspect that what George Gilder, Matt Taibbi, and Glenn Greenwald do not understand is how deep and dark the connections and the cash and the funneling of cash from the government is to these organizations. They don't fundamentally have to follow business model. These people offered their services for free for decades, and now they're heavily into ads, but they didn't need, they had sugar daddies on Wall Street, or maybe inside the CIA that kept them going for decades. But he says, this is what Matt Stoller wrote about in his, about how Facebook makes its money. He said, it's like if you were in a bar and there was a guy in the corner that was constantly egging people on into getting into fights, and he got paid whenever somebody got into a fight. That's the business model here. He says that they're trying to steer people to sensational content. Now, I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to steer people to the content that the CIA and DARPA want them steered to. And they will be the handmaids of these government organizations. Their big problem for them, the only problem that the technocrats have at this point, is how do they reconcile the demands, the conflicting demands from different governments, right? That's why Rubio, when he talked about censorship after Alex Jones and InfoWars were censored in August of 2018. The only thing that Rubio was concerned about was you're going to censor the people we tell you to censor, right? Not the people that China tells you to censor. That's all he was concerned about. He didn't care about how they censored information domestically. He said, these utility-like firms take in data from everything that you know on the web, whether you're on their sites or not, and they use that information to create a methodology that allows a vendor to buy the most effective possible ad in the cheapest possible location. So, if Joe Schmo Motors wants to sell you a car, by the way, we're going to have Eric Peters on in the third hour, epautos.com, and we'll be talking about what is happening with cars, especially what is happening with this $3 to $4 trillion infrastructure bill that Biden is putting out, which is going to be the death knell for private, reliable transportation. They're going to force everybody into the battery-operated electric cars, and they're going to spend trillions of dollars to do that. And even worse, this taxing vehicles by the mile that is being pushed by the same people will be a way to, even if you don't have one of their electronic cars, which comes with all of this, they'll have a box in the car so that they can tax you by the mile. And we'll have to do it because we can't collect gasoline taxes from electric cars, and we're going to force you to drive electric cars. So now we're going to force everybody to have a box in their car. It's going to report everything about the way that you drive and how far you drive and how fast you drive and how many miles you drive so that you can be taxed and monitored with all of this. This is very predictable. Eric and I have been talking about this for years. That is now being rolled out as well. But going back to the example here, if Joe Schmo Motors wants to sell you a car, they can either pay premium prices to advertise in a place like Car and Driver or epautos.com, or they can go to Facebook and Google, who will match that car dealership to a list of men aged 55 and up who looked at an ad for a car in the last week, and they can target them with some other cheaper site. So he says, if a company actually did this through physical means, breaking into offices, taking subscriber lists, and targeting the names for ads, we would all be like, wow, that's outrageous, that's crazy, that's stealing. But this is their business model. Secondly, the company's model depends on keeping attention siloed. If users are regularly exposed to different points of view, if they develop healthy habits of weighing fact versus fiction, they'll be a tougher target for engagement. Exactly right. U.S. military is launching task force to fight information war against China. See, this is how this always works. The story from antiwar.com. All of this is coming from the defense and military industrial complex, the surveillance state and the military industrial complex. They always couch it as, we need to know what everybody is doing and saying on the internet because we've got to be able to fight the Russians, or we've got to be able to fight the Chinese, or fill in the blank. But actually, they've made no bones about the fact, just as this representative from Texas said, they've made no bones about the fact that they view their political opponents here in America as just as dangerous, if not more so, than China and Russia. And this goes back to the fall of 2017, the end of October, had Clint Watts go to one of these dog and pony shows where they had just had the high-profile people from social media and Google come in, and after they left, Clint Watts was the one who told everybody what was going on. He said, we already have a divided country, and we have a civil war that's already started, and we have to silence the people who oppose us on social media. We have to silence the cannons on social media. That was in October of 2017. And that was before they did the first high-profile targeted silencing at InfoWars. And then 2 months after that, they purged 800 sites, not all Trump supporter sites, but people who were the common thread, because there were a lot of Trump-supporting sites who did not get purged at that point in time. A lot. But the common thread were people who opposed the surveillance state and the foreign wars and things like that. This is where this is coming from. And so as you look at the U.S. military launching a task force to fight an information war against China, no, that's the excuse. They are more concerned about fighting against the people they identify as domestic extremists, and that's anybody who disagrees with the government and the empire's policies. We actually are able to tamp down some of the disinformation that they continuously sow. Well, that's always been the goal. They're going to have offensive cyber operations that could be part of the influence campaign, says Paul Nakasone, head of the U.S. Cyber Command, as he also spoke with senators on Thursday. So do you think that had anything to do with it? Of course, same thing. Greenwald calls out USA Today reporter over an article targeting the Capitol riot legal defense funding, and then he gets accused of harassment. An article from RT, Twitter's blue check vanguard has ripped into Pulitzer Prize winner Glenn Greenwald for criticizing USA Today reporter's debut article. She's an intern. Her first article, Brenna Smith. She tweeted, "This is my first story." She described the situation with a typical good versus evil fluffing, given that the content related to former President Trump and the so-called January the 6th insurrection. Defendants charged in relation to the event, she said, continue to crowdfund their legal fees online using popular payment processors despite a growing crackdown from tech companies. She said this presented an insurrection fundraiser by extremists, rather than just an effort for people to be able to raise money for their defense, which is protected under the Constitution, right? Crowdfunding legal fees is typical use for sites like GoFundMe. But she said that 10 people involved in the Capitol demonstration were using GiveSendGo, the self-styled number one free Christian crowdfunding site, to help to cover their legal costs. She pointed out another site, AllFundIt, another Christian conservative alternative to GoFundMe. The article concluded with a concerned description of reporters' efforts to donate small sums of money in the name of Proud Boys members and other alleged rioters, noting that while some campaigns had disappeared from crowdfunding websites following concerned messages sent by USA Today reporters, others had not. So Glenn Greenwald responded to her maiden scalp hunting voyage, as RT puts it, with a ringing denunciation of the, quote, journalistic tattletale and censorship industry. That is it. That is what so-called mainstream press has become. A journalistic tattletale censorship industry. CNN and the rest of them. And he tweeted out, he said, I'm not exaggerating. It seems like 50% of journalism these days is finding new ways to pressure and to shame tech companies in order to silence, censor, and banish people from the internet that are disliked by journalists. The main cause is not transparency, but internet censorship. That's what they're teaching in journalism school. Now, is censorship. Because it's part of the cancel culture, right? Every major, whatever your major is in college, everybody is majoring in cancellation. It's this Marxist domination. It's not just intolerance. It is the desire to dominate others. And so, of course, that's what the journalists are going to do. They're not interested in questioning. They're not interested in finding out and discovering corruption. No. It's to cancel anybody that they disagree with, that they don't like. They love the government. The government gives them lots of money and jobs and position. Greenwald did make it clear that if the intern intended on pursuing a career alongside the likes of CNN's Brian Stelter and the New York Times' Taylor Lorenz, two censor-happy reporters who had never met a wrong thinker they couldn't smear as the next big thing in hate, Greenwald said Smith would enjoy a successful career in the new anti-First Amendment journalism industry. Plenty of his followers echoed his criticism, but for the most part, he was eviscerated on social media for pushing back against the cancel mob, because that's where the cancel mob lives, on social media. But some of the people who supported him said, well done in using the prescribed propaganda lexicon, including extremist, insurrection, and white nationalist to caricature these people into the evil that we know they are. You're going to do just fine serving the empire. This is the speculatist. Another person, Chuck Warren, said a criminal defendant's right to a lawyer is found in the Sixth Amendment, which requires the assistance of counsel for the accused in all criminal prosecutions. This means that a defendant has a constitutional right to be represented by an attorney during a trial. You oppose this? Well, yes, she does. She opposes everything in the Constitution, quite frankly. And before we get into America Held Hostage, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to tell you where you can find our programs. We have added some new places where you can follow us with video clips. We've added, in the last week or two, we've added Odyssey last week. Week before that, we added Rumble. So now, in addition to BitChute and YouTube, you can find us on those platforms as well. You'll find the links at thedavidknightshow.com. You'll also find the links to live streams at DLive and Trovo, because Periscope, by the way, if you're watching this on Periscope, you're watching this on Twitter, it's going to end as of a couple of days, end of March, it's done. So take a look at where these other live streams are if you're currently following us on Twitter. There will be no way for us to do live broadcasts on Twitter. So you'll have to go to Trovo and DLive. I'll tweet those links every day before the show starts, but there will be no live show on Twitter after tomorrow. Also, you'll be able to find where you can support us. PayPal, you can send money via email to davidknightshow@protonmail.com. I really do appreciate all the tips, informations, and comments that I get from people there at davidknightshow@protonmail.com as well. Thank you for your comments, for your prayers and encouragement. And so please share the links to these. You'll also find all the different podcasts. And we've now added Spreaker to the podcasts as well. So if you want an updated list of this, and we should have in the next couple of weeks an updated website as well. But right now, the website is just a single page with links to where you can support us. And subscribe, star, David Knight Show. There you can make one-time contributions or continuing contributions. Also Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, and we have a P.O. box there. We're going to be right back. We'll give you all that information and show you where it is on thedavidknightshow.com, and we'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country, as well as our family.
This, my friends, is proof of white supremacy. So says Oxford University, and quite frankly, I agree with him. You want an example of the supremacy of Western civilization? I can think of none better than Beethoven and Bach and Mozart. But of course, when you have a very complicated thing like a symphony orchestra, you can't have this kind of complexity without having sheet music. So if we want to get rid of the supremacy of white Western civilization, as they say, then we have to get rid of sheet music. And they have a solution for that at Oxford University. University of Oxford is considering proposals that would remove sheet music from its music department. Maybe they can remove all books from the library as well. You know, Fahrenheit 451. Just burn them all. We don't need this. This is Oxford University. By the way, this is the university that has produced the AstraZeneca vaccine in conjunction with Bill Gates. Bill Gates brought in the pharmaceutical company, AstraZeneca, so they could make money out of it. And it's Oxford University. There you go. These are the people you're going to be injecting this insanity into your veins. And, you know, when I hear that music, my first exposure to classical music was on television. I'll never forget how excited I was to watch the Huntley-Brinkley Report. Not because I knew anything about what they were saying as a very young child, but because I loved that music I just played for you. Beethoven's Ninth Scherzo, and which I later found out what it was. I just thought, these guys have got the best theme song I've ever heard for a TV show. And then after the theme song was over, I was kind of done with it. Same thing with The Lone Ranger. I love the opening of The Lone Ranger. The William Tell Overture by Rossini, but didn't care too much. Even as a child, they were a little bit too stiff and unbelievable, The Lone Ranger. But boy, that was wonderful music to really get the heart pumping. So, you know, that has to go, right? Because that's just, it's just too European, it's too white, it's too much of Western civilization. We have to have a purge. And so this is the way that they dominate you. Again, Doug Wilson, the clip that I played yesterday, he's spot on. These people would rather burn society down if they're on the top, if they're leading it, rather than to serve in a society that is working great. Their desire to rule rules them. And they don't care what damage they do to the rest of us. It's all about domination. And they don't really care about what they're talking about. They just want to destroy the system that is here so they can be in control. They want to rewrite the dictionary. They want to purge the music. Music educators, quote unquote, at Oxford University have joined the wider iconoclastic movement. That's a good way to describe it, I guess. The Breitbart, which has been sweeping through British academia. In other words, let's destroy everything. That was the iconoclast, right? That was a movement by individuals who said, we don't like the religious paintings and statues and things like that in our churches, so let's just bust it all down, right? The music department at the prestigious and ancient University of Oxford has seen calls to remove music notation from the curriculum as professors seek to focus less on white European heritage and culture. According to documents seen by the Telegraph, the woke educators, let's not call them woke, they're Ewok. Just take that E and put it in the front, and you have the little fuzzy, little despicable, stupid sock puppets that ruin the third Star Wars installment. And these people are ruining our civilization just like the Ewoks ruined the Star Wars series, but not as bad as when Disney got it. Anyway, the Ewok educators went on to claim that musical notation itself is, quote, a colonialist representational system, unquote, that has complicity to white supremacy. Is it? This is all about colonialism? The claim is similar to leftist pronouncements in America that mathematics is inherently racist. And again, when you look at this, Breitbart doesn't get what's going on because they try to argue that there's no connection with Beethoven or Bach or Mozart and slavery. There's no connection there. This assertion is somewhat dubious, as Western classical music, as well as the practice of sheet music notation, predates the Atlantic slave trade, stemming back to musical traditions from the medieval period, such as Gregorian chanting. Don't do that. Don't argue with these idiots. Just tell them to shut up and turn up the volume on Beethoven. The bottom line is, we have a lot of civilizations that didn't make any musical notation. I mean, wouldn't you have liked to have known what the music of Greek and Roman civilization sounded like? Or maybe the music of African civilization probably it could have gone through several iterations as well. Every society has musical instruments, but only Western civilization created musical notation so so that we know what Gregorian chant sounds like. And we can reproduce it today. And we also created a system of recording information. We created books. We created printing presses. And that is something that they want to destroy as well. We must not get into this. And we must not even talk about the fact that, well, it didn't have anything to do with the Atlantic slave trade. Every civilization, as Thomas Sowell pointed out, every civilization has had slavery. The only civilization that tried to stop slavery within its own civilization, as well as in other civilizations, was Western civilization. That's the only civilization that stopped slavery. Every other civilization, African, Native American, South American, they did slavery, they did human sacrifices, all of that. It was only in Western civilization, led by people like William Wilberforce, who stopped the slave trade because he was a Christian. It's not just Western civilization. It's the connection to Christian principles. And it's the blessing of God that gives us liberty. We're the only civilization that stopped it. And that's the reality. So slavery is not a way that you can even rationally attack Western civilization, but this is not about that. It's not about who was connected with Western civilization. Anybody that made money off of Western civilization has to be purged, that type of thing. No. This is simply Marxism. And this is nothing other than the tool that the Marxists decided to use decades ago to create a race war in the West. This is why the open borders as well, to try to pit one group against the other. That's what they're doing. Different people groups pitted against each other, creating ethnic warfare instead of the class warfare that they used to establish the Russian and Chinese revolts. No. This is about ethnic conflict, deliberate creation of this. All the globalists are Marxists, and these people are serving their interests. So their proposal is that they should play pop music and pop culture, right? Because who needs sheet music when you have dancing whores that you can auto-tune the voices, right, for MTV? We don't need Beethoven anymore. Everybody would much rather watch these whores bump and grind and pretend to sing. We can mechanically reproduce their voices. That's what we need. That's real Western civilization. And so they're trying to destroy the foundation of Western civilization that we really ought to go back to. Her name was Lucia Whalen Brimmer. This is a story from Information Liberation, Chris Minahan. This shows the hatred of the class warfare that they're creating. We're seeing this over and over again. People being attacked, a toddler shot in the head by a black neighbor playing in his front yard in North Carolina simply because he was white. He hated him. A black man stabbing a teenager in the neck as a teenager and his family were waiting in line to order at McDonald's. Why? Because he was white. Lucia Whalen Brimmer, a 13-year-old girl, shot dead by a juvenile thug while walking in a Virginia suburb. She was known by those who knew her as a brave, hardworking, and kind to everyone. She was reportedly shot dead while walking in a Virginia suburb. The teenage boy is charged with the murder of an eighth-grade girl who was shot multiple times in Virginia. They will not release his name because he also is a minor. There's no indication that he was after anything other than just hating her because white. We've had individuals attacked on the street. We had Rick Moranis blindsided and knocked down in New York City. Why? By a black guy. Why? Because he just doesn't like white people. And it's because of the propaganda from the media creating this race war, hating people for the color of their skin, not judging them by the content of their character, throwing away the greatest contributions that we've been able to save, things like Beethoven and Mozart. Her family owned a farm called Liberty Tree Farm. Liberty Tree Farm is saddened to report that our beloved daughter and joyful farmer, Lucia, was killed in a senseless act of violence. Thank you for keeping our family in your thoughts as we navigate the next few weeks. Witnesses reported seeing two girls walking along a path followed by the suspect, then hearing at least five shots. He ran from the scene while one of the girls fell after being struck. She later died at a local hospital. And again, in neighboring Maryland, one of these other cases that was mentioned by Chris Minahan, Information Liberation, in neighboring Maryland, two African-American teenage brothers viciously beat a 59-year-old John Marvin Weed to death at a county fair, spit on his body because he declined to give them a dollar. One killer was placed in behavior modification. The other got off with probation because the judge ruled that they had to be tried as juveniles. That's what we can expect to see happening with it. At USA Today, you had another budding reporter, like the one that Glenn Greenwald was talking about, fired for falsely blaming white people for the Boulder shooting. A race and inclusion editor, that's what she was hired for by USA Today. But she was actually too racist, even for racist USA Today. She falsely blamed the Boulder supermarket shooting on white people. "It's always an angry white man, always," she tweeted. But it was too far even for them. Because, of course, we all know that it was a Syrian migrant who had a chip on his shoulder about anybody who wasn't Islamic, had a chip on his shoulder about the country that brought him in. But I can understand that he came over here with anger about the war that Obama escalated there. Who knows? Doesn't justify any of this. She said, "I'm no longer working at For the Win and USA Today. Here's what happened." She said, "It was a careless error of judgment sent at a heated time that doesn't represent any commitment to racial equality." Let me tell you, this reporter, Amal Javieri, is the same one that wrote that article. She doesn't just hate white people, she hates Christians. She's the one who wrote that article at For the Win. For the Win is supposed to be sports, but she's also, what they do at USA Today is they put people who are race editors into sports. I don't know that she's ever played sports. I don't know if she's ever played basketball, but she was reporting on the NCAA tournament. Is very upset about the fact that a Christian college that had a code of ethics that banned all forms of premarital sex, that including homosexual sex, that spoke against homosexual marriage. I spent a lot of time talking about that. I said all of the things that she took exception with in their code and demanded that the NCAA purge this Christian college out of any competition. All the things that she took exception to are things that they took straight out of the Bible. And this is where this is headed with the so-called Equality Act. It's the same reporter. That's not typically picked up by the people who are reporting this incident. They don't care when they come after Christians. They only care when they come after white people. The problem is that this is simply Marxism. And yes, the white people have to go, but especially the Christians have to go. In her world, racial equality apparently means blaming an entire race of people. That's right. She also referenced a 2017 tweet in which she called out a reporter's white privilege as another reason for her dismissal. She said, "My previous tweets were flagged not for inaccuracy or for political bias, but for publicly naming whiteness as a defining problem. That is something the USA Today and many other newsrooms across the country cannot tolerate." Let me tell you something. This woman is consumed with hate. And she has different groups that she hates. And unfortunately, she's not the only one at USA Today. She's not there anymore. But this is what she's about. She's about breaking people into groups. Let me go back to 1973 and give you the perspective of John Wayne. John Wayne did an article, an album in 1973. And did an LP album. He called it America. And on that album, he read a poem called Hyphen. I'm going to play for you just the beginning of it and see if he didn't understand where we are today. 1973, John Wayne.
His dictionary defines is a symbol used to divide a compound word or a single word. So it seems to me that when a man calls himself an Afro-American, a Mexican-American, Italian-American, an Irish-American, Jewish-American. What he's saying is, I'm a divided American. Well, we all came from other places, different creeds, different races, to form a nation, to become as one. Yet look at the harm a line has done. A simple little line, and yet as divisive as a line can get.
All right, yeah, imagine that. When we started labeling everybody with hyphens, that was when this all began. When I heard that poem, it was brought to my attention by Bent Sagnelli, NewVirginiaPlan.com. And when I was not familiar with that. A lot of people were, but I wasn't. And when I heard that, we had a laugh because when I met Karen about that time, we met in 1974, And when we met, she was from New York, and everybody in New York was a hyphenated American. You were an Italian American, you were a Polish American, you were a fill-in-the-blank Irish American, whatever. They were all different European groups, and they were not necessarily fighting each other. But when she met me, she said, so what are you? I said, what do you mean? And I said, I'm an American. That's all I am. She thought I was pulling her leg. She goes, no, really. Where are your people from? I said, from America. I don't have any other country that I have a connection to other than America. Going back for more generations than I know, I've all lived here in America. But that was what used to unite us. She was second-generation immigrants. And it's not wrong to be proud of your heritage and your culture. I'm not saying that. But what these people have been able to do with a hyphen, you can use a hyphen to join things, as John Wayne is pointing out in his essay there, his poem. You can join things with a hyphen. But now the hyphen, as of 1973, the hyphen was being used to disjoin. And that's truly been weaponized in our time, absolutely weaponized in our time. I want to take a look at an amazing statement as we see the propaganda step up. We have the CDC official talking about how scared she is and the impending doom. Here she is.
Game over, man. It's game over. What are we going to do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
That wasn't her. I'm sorry. That was Bill Paxton, Aliens. But, she came off the same way, except this is the way she put it.
I'm going to lose the script, and I'm going to reflect on the recurring feeling I have of impending doom. We have so much to look forward to, so much promise and potential of where we are, and so much reason for hope. But right now, I'm scared.
Yeah, right now, I'm scared. I'm just scared. And she said, I'm going to lose the script here, and I'm just going to reflect on the recurring feelings that I have of impending doom. She's not nearly as good an actor as Bill Paxton. you got to sell it more, lady. Come on, you can do a better job. You've got a job here at CDC. Just think about if you want to really get into character, okay, and really show your fear. Just think about all of the money that you're making and all the prestige that you're making and how that's all going to be taken away from you if you don't do a good job of selling this fear, right? That should get you into character. But she says, no, I'm scared. I would like to share with you my recurring feelings of impending doom. And so I'm going to go now off of script. Well, if she's that scared, what is she doing there? Do we need people leading us who are scared to death? I talked about this many times. I still can't believe a year ago, seeing Peggy Noonan, former speechwriter for Ronald Reagan. She won a prize for a speech that she gave Ronald Reagan that he read at some World War II veterans ceremony. It was an excellent speech. And when you're giving a speech, talking about people who sacrificed their lives to save our country and to fight for freedom, you know, you are emphasizing courage. You think that Peggy Noonan would understand the importance of courage, as John Wayne would say. Courage is being afraid, but saddling up anyway, right? But no, no, no. She writes an op-ed piece, so, you know, if you aren't scared, you're not doing this right. You don't understand if you're not panicked. That was Peggy Noonan, as this whole thing was kicking off a year ago. And so, if this lady is panicking, I said at the time, I said, is panic ever the right response to anything? No matter how real the danger is, no matter how imminent it is, or even if it is happening right now, if you are under attack, you grab the guns and you shoot back. You don't go hide in the closet, Peggy. And this woman, Rochelle Walensky, that's not what you do. You fight back. You don't cover your face with a security blankie. No, no, no. But quite frankly, you remember about a year ago when it was just 2 weeks that we're going to have to wait? You know, 14 to, I don't know, 17 days?
17 days? Hey, man, I don't want to rain on your parade, but we're not going to last 17 hours. Those things are going to come in here just like they did before, and they're going to come in here, and they're going to come in here, and they're going to get us!
This little girl survived longer than that with no weapons and no training.
Why don't you put her in charge?
Yeah, why don't you put that little girl in charge? Because, you know, the girls, little girls, little boys, they're not, they can survive this alien virus that has been unleashed upon us by these corporations, right? I mean, they're not at risk. We're putting them at risk. We're putting masks over their faces. We're going to use them for trial and error dosages. It's the most amazing thing I have seen. They're going to enroll these kids and say, well, we don't really know what the appropriate dosage is, so let's just, you know, bring me some kids to experiment on, says Pfizer, Moderna, and Fauci. They've already been experimenting on these kids for the last year. This is a psychological experiment. This is psychological damage that they've done to these kids that will stay with them for a very long time. You know, when I played the duck and cover drills, that was psychological damage done to me. It caused me to have a severe distrust of government, but I had a lot of nightmares about nuclear war, things like that. This is going to shape these kids. I don't know if it's going to be in a positive way or not. But right now, I'm scared. And she chokes back tears, evidently, as she fear-mongers the impending doom. Well, just take a look at the numbers. That should give you, oh, that's right, you can't trust math. What is she going to do? I mean, if she could look at the numbers, if she could read a chart, she would understand that none of this stuff really, really made any difference. Not at all. She said, so we're almost there, but not yet. And so I'm asking you to just hold on a little longer to get vaccinated. See, help is on the way. We were told that it was going to be 14 days, 17 days. Just had to hang on. Here we are, a year later, and Fauci has shot down all the rescue missions that have come to us, right? We had a big supply tanker bringing in, you know, HCQ, shoot that down from the ground station. Fauci kind of acts like that, what was it, Paul Reiser? Was that the name of the actor there? He was trying to sneak the alien back. You know, that's the character of Fauci. And aliens. Yeah, we're not going to save you because I've got this bigger agenda. See, you know, we could kill all the aliens, but let's not do that. We want to save that because we could make money off of this thing and we could get some more power off of it. So I'm just asking you to hang on just a little bit longer so we can all get vaccinated. Then she noted how the current trajectory in the U.S. looks very similar to other countries, including Germany, Italy, and France. She said, they looked like this a few weeks ago, and so now we're starting to look like them. Well, we'll take a look then, lady, at the chart that you know shows Florida versus California, or Texas versus New York, or that shows Sweden versus UK, and you can see that these lockdowns do not work. And as Zero Hedge points out, here's what Walensky is freaking out about. Could it simply be a rise in testing around spring break that's responsible for Americans to have to check their health before they travel, right? Or is it remnants of the vaccine? They're being picked up by the PCR tests being run at 35 at a cycle of a cycle threshold of 35. That's exactly right. I'm glad they put that in there. That needs to be focused more. I've said that many times. We don't know that they've isolated a virus, right? There's a lot of indication that they have not isolated this virus. Nevertheless, they're looking for a specific sequence, which happens to be what they are, this sequence that they are looking for. They inject this genetic modifying mRNA vaccine, or the adenovirus carries it for Johnson & Johnson, these others. What it does is it replicates part of the genetic sequence that they're looking for. So why is it that if you're going to magnify it that much, wouldn't you expect to find more cases of that? Wouldn't you expect that when you use a cycle threshold that is too high, 35 is still too high, even if they've reduced it to a cycle threshold of 35, should be 30 or below. And so they're still over-magnifying it, and they're looking for the very fragments that they are injecting you to create. And it could be that, and then they're doing more of this testing. If you look at this chart, I'll just show this to you. Look at that mountain. We're on the downside there. And it's such a tiny upturn that you can't even see it. I can't even see, not just that looking at this sheet, but I can't even see it on my paper here. It's negligible. It's negligible. So she is freaking out over something that is not real. And I don't think that her fear is genuine as well. Doesn't look genuine to me. But, you know, we can say crocodile tears, whatever. Because we're really doing some things prematurely right now with regard to opening up, says Fauci. So she says, I'm speaking today as your CDC director. You're not my CDC director. The CDC is not mine. CDC belongs to the vaccine and pharmaceutical industry. The CDC is private. It's not even governmental, although it is using the power of government, has been turned over to it, like the Federal Reserve. So the CDC is not mine. She is not my CDC director. But I'm not speaking to you necessarily as your CDC director, but as a wife, as a mother, as a daughter. Well, she's not my wife, my mother, or my daughter any more than she is my CDC director. And she's not my doctor either, so shut up. I don't really care about the fear-mongering, but I understand the agenda. And so, you know, we look at what is happening in Texas. A 7-day COVID positivity rate reached an all-time low of 5%. While hospitalizations fell to their lowest level since October. So is it a rise in deaths or hospitalizations? No. Not even a rise in cases of people who are asymptomatic, where you are testing for the very thing that you're injecting them with and then magnifying it to a ludicrous level. That's why I say it's not just Operation Warp Speed. This is Operation Ludicrous Speed. It's not just Texas either. As Breitbart puts it, CDC director warns of impending doom as red states, I hate that term, like Texas and Florida thrive. Let's not make this about partisanship. And let's not allow them to apply these communist labels to us. Come on. Come on, please. CDC director warns of impending doom as COVID cases increase. Again, it's a tiny increase. And it's not something that is happening because of any relaxation in these proven ineffective measures of social distancing, lockdown, and masking. So when we look at a Dartmouth Brown study, they put their finger on the issue. A Dartmouth Brown study documents that it is the media that is stoking a vicious circle of fear on COVID. That's exactly right. This is a pandemic of fear. It's being stoked by the mainstream media and by alternative media, unfortunately. Many of the alternative media are saying that. Now, they'll push back against the mask, but not a year ago. A year ago, InfoWars, Mike Adams, were pushing the mask harder than Fauci. How dare him say that we don't need a mask right now when he was telling everybody, you don't need a mask. We've never used a mask for this kind of stuff. Then a few months later, he said, I was just trying to save the mask. I was lying to you because I wanted the mask for our heroes. So you now required to wear not an N95 mask. No, no, no. You're required to wear a bandana. Like a bandit. Of course, that doesn't work. But, you know, still at that time, Mike Adams was screaming, wear the mask or you're going to wind up getting the vaccine and you don't want the vaccine. I said, you know that the mask is a placeholder for the vaccine. They're saying the same thing about the mask that they've always said about the vaccines. Your mask doesn't protect you. Your vaccine doesn't protect you. Your mask and your vaccine protect other people, which is absolutely illogical. Something that doesn't protect you cannot protect other people. Absolutely illogical. Anyway, 87% of the Dartmouth Brown study, 87% of U.S. news stories are classified as negative about the COVID pandemic, quote-unquote, whereas in outside of the U.S., 51% are classified as negative. You see that big skew towards negative information? And they said, as a result of this negative propaganda being put out by mainstream media, by CNN and others, even when COVID-19 cases were falling nationally between April and June, major media discussed rising caseloads 5.3 times as frequently as they did falling caseloads. So even when the cases are falling off during the summer, what do? They talk five times more about rising cases than they do falling cases, even though the cases are not rising. As a result, they said when they asked the participants about what was really going on compared to the CDC statistics, how they were misinformed by the fear-mongering press, they said participants said that people aged 55 and older accounted for a little over half of the deaths, when actually, according to the CDC's numbers, as they have imputed COVID deaths to people, the CDC says, no, that's 92%. They think the people over 55 are slightly more than 50% of the cases, where the CDC says, no, it's 92% of the cases are people over 55, which is why I said they have simply relabeled the actuarial tables. It goes up exponentially with age, and it really begins at 55. Under that, 8%. And when you talk about those who are under 25, 0.2% of deaths, statistically zero. 0.2% of deaths. However, the participants overestimated that by a factor of 50. By a factor of 50. In June, CNN served up a particularly flagrant example of COVID scaremongering in an article titled, Healthy Teenager Who Took Precautions Died Suddenly of COVID-19. I remember before that, at the very outbreak of this, when it was still Italy being locked down, before we were even locked down, before the 381 days ago when Trump did the executive orders that created, that laid the groundwork for this legally and gave the financial incentives for states to do this. But leading up to that March the 13th, it was back in February, I believe, they were putting out anecdotal stories of people. And I remember very clearly that the one that was pushed so heavily by mainstream media, by the Drudge Report, and that was a soccer player, a young soccer player, early 20s, a very good soccer player. He was a coach, a youth coach, and things like that. And he died. And they portrayed it as a COVID death. Now, this is like a six-page article. Buried in the middle of this six-page article was one little paragraph talking about how he had leukemia, stage 4 leukemia. But, of course, he died from COVID. And that was it. You know, it was all about COVID. It wasn't about the leukemia that he had. And to see how COVID can take down a young soccer player. So you should be very afraid about this anecdotal story. And it was a personal tragedy. And so they went on for six pages about his life, all the people that he knew, his activity, and the personal tragedy of his death. And every death is a tragedy, but every death and every tragic death is not due to COVID, as CNN and the Drudge Report want you to believe. As they point out in this article, we're getting headlines that are nothing but an anecdotal infusion of fearful misinformation. How many times have you seen stories about people who died from Pick a disease, right? Are we seeing stories about people who tragically died all of a sudden from cancer, from heart disease, or from the flu? Oh, that's right. Nobody's dying from the flu now. Nobody died in the last year. Isn't that great? The COVID cured the flu. The lockdown cured the flu. So I guess we will have lockdowns every year to cure the flu, except that the lockdowns didn't do anything for COVID at all. 2 months earlier, the CDC announced that 90% of those hospitalized with the virus had one or more underlying conditions. It's worse than that. We knew before the lockdown happened on Friday the 13th of March last year, we already had two reports out of Italy, because Italy, if you remember, they were the brunt of a propaganda campaign coming out of China. And in Italy, they'd already produced two reports showing that the average age in both of these reports, one of them was 80, the other one was 79 and a half. And both of them, the people had 2.5 comorbidities. So this already did not look like a pandemic. It looked like a relabeling of the actuarial tables. And CDC admitted that, but it doesn't matter because CNN aggressively pushed a perception that nobody is safe. And there's nowhere to hide. And there's a sense of impending doom. And they've been able to transmit that sense of impending doom to the population at large, who are still seen wearing masks while alone outdoors, like that mainstream media reporter that I showed you yesterday, talking about how we're going to roll out the vaccine. We got to talk to people. These Trump reporters, these idiot Trump supporters, look at them. They're not wearing masks. They don't want to get the vaccine. And you got this young reporter doing a man on the street, nobody anywhere close to him, and he's got a mask on, and he's desperately gasping for air and sucking the mask in. I thought he was going to swallow the thing. Every time he'd take a breath. And so that's what the reporters are selling you as they do the not a man on the street report, but they do the mask on the street report. Washington Post actually ran a piece titled, "Welcome to Iowa, a state that doesn't care if you live or die." They did the same stuff over and over again to Ron DeSantis, right? And when neither Florida nor Iowa experienced negative consequences, says the Zero Hedge article, there was little media reporting of the good news that government restrictions and mandates may not be necessary after all. Not at all. The never-ending cycle of warning that various holidays and special events will bring a surge. It's going to be a surge. There's a surge that's coming. We just know it's a surge. I've got a Burks report here. Travis, can you fire that Burks report? Oh, I've got it right here. The Burks report. Burks shares her chilling conclusions. As America arrives at a moment of introspection on the coronavirus, this was a so-called documentary. A documentary that was done. But no. It was just a bunch of interviews that were selling fear on CNN. They called it COVID War. The pandemic doctors speak. Let me tell you, it is a war. It is a war against us. It is a war to terrorize us. It is a war that began with economic sanctions as all these undeclared endless wars began abroad. This is a domestic war against us. Domestic war against us. The COVID war. That's a good name for it. CNN special. The pandemic doctors speak out. And here's their reaction to it and a clip from Dr. Scarf herself.
I mean, I was riveted seeing these six top the country's top health officials speak out for the first time. And there was really a sense, Dr. Wen, I got of them having had pent up things to say. They, I believe, felt muzzled. They peeled off their muzzle last night to explain the dysfunction, the chaos, the purely partisan decisions that were made in the Trump White House that Dr. Burks says cost lives. Let me just play for anyone who missed it what Dr. Burks said about the death toll.
Well, I look at it this way. The first time we have an excuse, there were about 100,000 deaths that came from that original surge. All of the rest of them, in my mind, could have been mitigated or decreased substantially if we took the lessons we had learned from that moment. That's what bothers me every day.
That's what bothers me every day. Creaky voice there. Yeah, she's, maybe that's why she's wearing that scarf. Maybe she's got larynx issues or something. I don't know. She's now in private consultation. She's now a private consultant. Maybe she's a fashion consultant. I don't know. Maybe she's coming out with her own line of scarves and masks. But she said, after those first 100,000 deaths, that was not on us. But we should have known by then that all these measures, right, the lockdowns and the masks and social distancing and all this stuff, we should have known and we should have done that more deeply. Well, you should know by now that none of that worked. Dr. Birx, CDC doctor. U.S. may finally be getting a handle on the coronavirus pandemic, but for so many Americans, it's just too late, says CNN in their article about their documentary about their fear-mongering. Dr. Birx said the number of coronavirus deaths could have been decreased substantially if cities and states across the country had aggressively applied the lessons of the first surge towards mitigation last spring, potentially preventing the surges that followed. I don't know. Again, look at the data, Dr. Birx. You worked for the CDC, so why don't you take a look at the CDC data? Is it that you can't understand it? Did nobody ever teach you at the college that you went to how to read a chart? Or is that you don't want to? And as the CNN pointed out, they said, oh, these doctors peeled off their muzzles. They took off their masks to talk to CNN? Now, they've muzzled us, haven't they? The medical bureaucracy's shameless, destructive COVID response, an article from WND. This is an op-ed piece from a medical doctor, Dr. Marilyn Singleton, talking about the bullying of the population into a paralyzing fear. She said discarded surgical masks strewn along the sidewalk aptly represent COVID-19's lasting legacy. The federal medical bureaucracy's response to the pandemic has resulted in a wasteland of lost economic and educational opportunities, psychologically damaged children, terminally lonely nursing home residents, lives lost to suicide, illicit drug overdoses, and missed diagnoses and treatments of other diseases. She doesn't even mention all the businesses that have been murdered by these lockdown bureaucrats and the politicians who obey them. But then she does talk about the businesses, and I find it interesting that she says 140,104 businesses were temporarily closed, 97,966 permanently closed by September 20th. You know, these kinds of death statistics of businesses and the destruction of so many years of labor and toil and scrimping and saving and investing your time and your money into a business as all small businesses do, that's never mentioned. That's just erased because these people are not essential. And the saddest thing about this is that she talks about 100,000 businesses permanently closed by September 2020. Why is it that we don't have any more current statistics in September? That is so far off of the charts, they don't even bother to talk about it. Oh, we get a daily, almost an hourly update on the Drudge Report about the number of presumed people who died with COVID based on their PCR tests and the financial incentives for the hospitals to identify people as having COVID, regardless of what other real illnesses they're suffering from. But we don't bother to even count the number of businesses that have been permanently closed. She said, so why were children barred from attending school? To protect grandma? Even if children were found to be transmitters of the disease, and they haven't been, a sensible alternative to depriving all students of a proper education and a social life would have been to ask the children whether or not elders lived in their homes. And if so, that group could have been provided with different educational accommodations. But the way of bureaucracy is a all or none, with no room for individual considerations. Typical of blanket decrees, the most vulnerable fared the worst. And let me say this, she doesn't merely make this point in detail, but I got to say this. The biggest problem with government health care is this collective, one size fits all. We will make the decisions for your life. We'll decide what treatment you get and what treatment you don't, and when you get it. That is the point that should be opposed. Not just the economic aspects of it, the The Republicans will always focus just simply on economics, and that was horrific as well. You need to be able to afford health insurance. You need to be able to choose what health insurance you want. But what we're experiencing right now with this lockdown is we're experiencing government health care imposed on us by Fauci. You understand that, right? This is a government health care system worse than Obamacare. This is much worse than Obamacare. This is a system of government health care imposed by President Trump with his executive orders, financially incentivizing it, saying, if you identify somebody with COVID, we'll cut you a $13,000 check. We want you to keep the hospitals clear, however, for anything that's elective, like, you know, cancer. Don't bring people in for cancer screening or even necessarily a lot of the cancer treatment. Keep those beds open for COVID cases, and then we'll make up that lost revenue if you can find somebody that you say has COVID. And we don't have the tests, and the tests don't work, they said. That's what the American Hospital Association said by the end of the summer. They said, wait a minute, now you're saying you want to see tests? But back when you told us to lock everything down and identify all these people, you told us that you didn't have the test, number one, and the tests that you did have didn't work. You told us to make a clinical diagnosis, and we did that, and now you don't want to pay us the 20-25% bonus on top of the $13,000 we get for identifying somebody as a COVID patient, and they put them on a ventilator, you get another $39,000, and voila! Even before you charge them for the use of the ventilator and the daily hospital charges, you've already paid for the ventilator, and you made a nice, tidy profit, $2,000. See, this is government health care put in by subversion and stealth by Donald Trump. He didn't stop Obamacare. They promised they would. They promised they'd give us a free market health care system. But then what they did was they dictated everything to us in the name of COVID. Far more than with Obamacare. Obamacare was just a warm-up. Trump care. Now, Trump care, that's where it really rolls in, isn't it? And wait till you see what Biden does next. Oh, that's going to be great. No, no, no. We only focus on the money. We don't realize that Trump care with the pandemic, the incentives, the financial incentives. See, that's how Republicans do it. They don't do it with mandates. They buy you out. It's a leveraged buyout of our liberty, our privacy, our Constitution. Trump's executive order was a leveraged buyout, a hostile takeover of the Constitution, if you will. With immediate help, the public health gurus waged a campaign of fear to keep us in line while we waited for Fauci's solutions, vaccines, says the doctor. So, we got ventilators here for you. Of course, they'll kill almost everybody we put the invasive ventilator on. Or we have remdesivir. That's very expensive. It damages your liver as well. But, you know, hey, it's the standard of care here. I mean, it doesn't cure nobody, but hey, if you survive this, we think that you're going to get better faster. So, you got a couple $1,000s? About three? WHO report says COVID likely first jumped into humans from animals. And you got this picture of this guy holding a chart. And you know what this reminds me of? Since I saw this ridiculous picture, I immediately remembered Netanyahu when he was talking about the Iranian bomb. And remember he had that big chart? And it was like the proverbial cartoon bomb, the round bomb with a fuse sticking out of the top of the cylinder. It comes out as a big round ball, and then it's got a little cylinder on the top and a fuse that comes out. And it was lit. And that was his presentation about what was going to be happening with the Iranian bomb. And so this guy is doing basically the same thing as Netanyahu did with his COVID likely first jumped into humans from animals. That's right. Transmission of the virus from bats to humans through another animal, he said, is the most likely scenario. That a lab leak is extremely unlikely. Of course. Because, you know, the WHO is owned by Gates and does everything that China says. So there's absolutely nothing to worry about with that. We have 60 Minutes has a different idea about that. However, 60 Minutes... And Leslie Stahl was absolutely amazed. And put this in a bigger context of what is happening here. This, like the pronouncements of this CDC director, even though the WHO is coming out and they're trying to cover the tracks because they're trying to cover up for China, and they're trying to cover up for Fauci. But this is part, another part of the fear campaign. Just like we saw last year, well, this is a bioweapon escaped from the labs, and that was a likely scenario. We didn't know if this is going to be dangerous or not, and I said, even if it is dangerous, the lockdown is by far and away the wrong way to approach this. Even if this was deliberately engineered and leaked as a bioterror event, the lockdown is the wrong thing to do because we'll never get our freedoms back. But, of course, if you talk about this coming from that lab has ties to China, obviously, and also to Fauci and the NIH. He has criminal complicity in these gain-of-function research issues here. And it could have been engineered, and it could have been released deliberately. But here's the point, folks. We know now, a year later, that it's not dangerous. It doesn't matter if it was bioengineered by Fauci. He ought to be in jail for continuing with gain-of-function research when he was told not to. But it doesn't matter, because now we know that even if, here's another possibility, you know, well, did it come from bats? Did it come from pangolins? Or does it even exist? That's the possibility they won't talk about. Either way, it doesn't matter. This could be anything from the scale that it's just a figment of their imagination, a piece of propaganda, or it could be something that happened naturally. It could have been released accidentally. It could have been released deliberately. Either way, we now know that it's not anything that we need to be locked down for. We know that whatever has been going around this last year, this strain of the flu that's been going around the last year, is easily treated with the things that they don't want you to be treated with. This is nothing more than a curated propaganda piece. But I want you to see the politics behind it. This is why I'm talking about. Roughly 1 year ago, reports Zero Hedge, Zero Hedge was permanently, quote-unquote, banned from Twitter for daring to suggest that the novel coronavirus outbreak rocking the globe might have been originated with a lab called the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And I pointed this out yesterday, the Biosafety Level 4 lab. They said, you doxed this guy. When they pointed out that on his LinkedIn profile, he said he was working with creating a coronavirus bat hybrids. It was a scientist who first pointed out the lab's proximity to the market and who noted the likelihood that the virus had probably leaked from the lab via an unsuspecting scientist. And this is what we heard from Trump's CDC director. Saying, well, you know, there's other people who have a different opinion of it, but I've worked in these labs. I know it's not uncommon for people to, if they're working on a respiratory coronavirus, for them to catch the respiratory coronavirus. But of course, if you talk about the coronavirus and you call it the China virus, oh, that's a hate crime. As a matter of fact, we just had an instructor with 25 years experience, an engineering instructor at the University of Cincinnati, and they fired him because he used the phrase China virus. See? This is how this works. It's the politics behind it. I just call it the Fauci virus. Anyway. What followed was a barrage of U.S. media stories claiming that the lab leak hypothesis was unsubstantiated, a conspiracy theory. NPR went so far as to publish a piece quoting a handful of scientists, all of whom had deep financial professional ties to China, talking up China's lab security protocols and dismissing the theory as completely baseless. Yet, reporting since then has confirmed official complaints about safety at the lab. Every one of these labs in the U.S. has safety issues. Alison Krauss, USA Today, Congress said stop it, 2014-2015. Fauci and Francis Collins continued to do it, did it in defiance of the congressional ban, funded it in China to escape the oversight. They should be put in jail. Reckless, unethical, said the other scientists and virologist who saw this reported. Yet, here we are 1 year later, after the two attempts to send teams of WHO scientists to investigate the origins of the virus, no foreigners were ever allowed to freely investigate. Here's the politics behind this. And here's how this is not about science or medicine. This is simply about their political agenda. So Leslie Stahl interviewed Jamie Metzl. And he said, we would have to ask the question, well, why in Wuhan? And to quote Humphrey Bogart, of all the gin joints in all the towns of the world, why Wuhan? And Claude Rains says, well, because That's where the biosafety level 4 lab is. What Wuhan does have is China's only level 4 virology institute, with probably the world's largest collection of bat viruses, including bat coronaviruses. So Leslie Stahl says, well, I'd seen that the World Health Organization team only spent 3 hours at the lab. Metzl said, well, while they were there, they didn't demand access to the records or the samples of the key personnel because of the ground rules that China set up with the WHO, which has never had the authority to make demands or to enforce international protocols. Metzl then goes on to say, it was agreed first that China would have veto power over who even got to be on the mission. And secondly, and then Leslie Stahl interrupts and says, and the WHO agreed to that? Metzl said, the WHO agreed to that. On top of that, the WHO agreed that in most instances, China would do the primary investigation and then just share its finding. Leslie Stahl says, no. Really? And then Metzl says, with these international experts, so these international experts weren't allowed to do their own primary investigation. Stahl then says, wait, you're saying that China did the investigation and showed the results to the committee and that was it? He says, yeah. She says, whoa. Who would have thought the World Health Organization would have been that political, right? Yeah. And then she interviews another guy who actually went there, Vazak. He said, yeah, we met with him. We said, do you audit the lab? And they said, annually. And then we asked, did you audit it after the outbreak? Yes. Was anything found? No. Do you test your staff? Yes. And Leslie Stahl says, but you were just taking their word for it. And Dysak says, what else can we do? There was a limit on what you can do, and we went right up to the limit. And we asked them tough questions, you know, like, did you kill this person? Did you kill Western civilization by modeling a lockdown based on a virus that even if you intentionally tried to kill the West, the real virus was the lockdown, the lies. Remember the videos that came out of China? Oh, look at how crowded the hospitals are. And I said, I was there. Everything in China is that crowded. We have articles 3 years earlier in New York saying, we got people, we don't have enough beds. We're putting people in the hallways and so forth. And same thing they were saying with the coronavirus. And they didn't need any of the 2,500 beds that the Army put in as emergency facility. They didn't need any of the beds that were brought into New York City and to L.A. on the hospital ships. Didn't need any of that. They didn't need Franklin Graham's emergency setup that was in Central Park. They didn't need any of that. But you remember, we saw all the pictures of the empty beds. We just didn't see anybody in the empty beds, right? They said, so what else can we do? There was a limit on what we could do. We went right up to the limit. Leslie Stahl says, but weren't the Chinese engaged in a cover-up? They destroyed evidence. They punished scientists who were trying to give evidence. Peter Daszak said, that wasn't our task to find out if China had covered up the origin issue. That's right. So you have Republican Representative Lee Zeldin has blasted the World Health Organization as China's useful idiots. But let me tell you who the real useful idiots are. The useful idiots are the ones who implemented their lockdown procedures that they modeled. The useful idiots are the people in the mainstream media who says, you know that biometric thing where they track everybody everywhere? That's kind of creepy when they do it for political reasons, but we're going to need that for this pandemic, and we better start doing it right now. Those are the useful idiots of the Chinese, more so even than the WHO. WHO. An alliance of autocracies. China wants to lead a new world order. This is an article from denews.com. And what they want to present here is a presumed competition between President Biden, who they say wants to forge an alliance of democracies, and China, who wants to make it clear that it has alliances of its own, that it wants to lead a new world order, and it wants to be the central leader of that. Let me say this about President Biden's alliance of democracies. There are no democracies left in Western civilization after your pandemic measures. We should call it the pandemic wars, the pandemic civil wars, the civil war of each and every one of the former democracies or republics against their own people. And it's every Western country going after their own people. It is a global pandemic series of civil wars. There are no democracies or republics to make alliances with. The only question is who's going to lead the new one world order. And so DeNews wants to say this is Biden versus China. But Biden is owned by China. We all know that. Just take a look at Hunter's laptop, which we'll get a good view of that if fellow McAleer is able to raise the money for his film. But no. He is the Manchurian laptop candidate. And he wants to reinstate mask mandates everywhere. He says, I'm reiterating my call for every governor, mayor, and local leaders, and also all of the servile businesses out there who are willing to sell the rope of fear that will be used to hang them. I am calling on every governor, mayor, and local leader to maintain and reinstate the mask mandate. Right. This is not politics, he says. No, it absolutely is. It's politics. It's why Abbott will not protect your liberty and your constitution here in Texas. Because he's going to say, it's not me. It's the local government. It's the businesses. It's, you know, just like it's the social media companies that are stealing your First Amendment rights. It's not me. I can't do anything about that to protect you. I have a letter here from Mark in Montana, small Montana town, he said, big timber. He said, I just went by our local theater here in this small town, and on the marquee over the local theater says, quote, wear a mask, it's a 2020 fashion statement. Ah, it's a fashion statement. It's a fad. You know, fad meant for a day. Unfortunately, this fad is not for a day. This fad is for the rest of our lives if we allow these people to get away with it. But, you know, what is for a day are Fauci's pronouncements about science or the World Health Organizations. Those last for about a day, and then we get something that is diametrically opposite. But no. The mask is not a fashion statement. It is a statement of submission, a statement of submission that will never end. You know, we have 30% of the people in Russia still want to go back to communism. You've got about 70% of the people say, let's get rid of this rotting corpse of Lenin that's in Red Square, that's used as an object of deification. Are they going to do that to Trump? No, let's get rid of this rotting corpse of Lenin. But 30% of the people say, no, we don't want that. We want that there. So Mark in Montana says, people truly have lost sight of the eternal. I will never go to that theater again. It's run by a group of yuppies and progressives. It makes me sick every time I pass by it. He said, your show on Friday really hit home with me and made me think, so easy to be worn down and to be weakened by all the perversions of truth, to be disheartened by the darkness of the world, so that the light of truth seems to fade. God bless and keep the torch burning. That's the whole point, folks. We do not have to have a spirit of fear. We don't fear this. Why? Because we have our hope in other things. And we have, and that's not a vain hope, it's a confident expectation. As Christians, we don't have to worry about that. And we don't have to, we can look at the, take the longer view. We can take even the eternal view. COVID waste and discarded face masks are killing wildlife around the globe. Oh, the irony. How about this? Let no crisis go to waste. And now the crisis is manufacturing waste that these people are freaking out about, the environmentalists, because it's got plastic in it. Did you know that? It's got plastic in it. Millions of coronavirus face masks that people are throwing away is a ticking plastic time bomb. But see, here's the basis of this story. The angle of this story is those dirty humans are killing the planet again. Can you believe that? You know, because we are the virus. We're killing Gaia, Mother Earth. I've told you that many times. That's the whole Gaia theory. We're the virus. Mother Earth is a sentient being And all the other animals are good, but humans are bad. And the problem is that we're saving these bad humans with face masks. And now the face masks that are being used to save the bad humans are going to create pollution that's killing animals. And so they talk about animals trying to eat the face masks and choking on them and eating the rubber gloves and stuff like that. And it's like, well, you know, maybe we should just stop making these things. How about that? No, that's not going to be the solution. We need to stop making humans. That's the solution, right? Since then, we've been collecting data and evidence of the consequences of COVID waste pollution on animals worldwide after we saw a bird that was caught in a latex glove. The irony of it and the tragedy of it. Look at this, a bird caught in a latex glove. I think the gloves are evil. No, the humans are evil. And after we've had all this talk about bats and pangolins and the mutating virus and jumping from species to species, there's nothing in this article where they're worried about the animals catching COVID from us, from our dirty face masks or our rubber gloves as they try to swallow them whole. Researchers note incidents of foxes in the UK and birds in Canada becoming entangled in discarded face masks. Hedgehogs, seagulls, crabs, even bats, perhaps some pangolins, are all encountering the disposable plastics of the environment. And then to show you where we are in terms of the fear, as that medical doctor was saying, this has had tremendous psychological damage. But people are starting to get to where they love it. And this is the whole point, the really insidious point of what Republicans like Trump and Abbott did, leaving this stuff on for us to get accustomed to it. This is an op-ed piece, Sophia Rosenbaum, on AP. And, of course, Drudge loved this and picked this up. Dear Normal, were you really that great in the first place? Dear Normal, everyone wants you back. It seems every day this late-stage pandemic era is marked with someone wistfully talking about normal. Going back to you, starting new with you. It's all about norms and normalcy. All about you. No, it's not. Actually, the new normal that we're getting is, do you remember Young Frankenstein, where Igor goes to get the brain? Instead of getting the one that was marked normal, he brought back, he says, yeah, I got the normal brain. What's the matter with that? And he goes, normal. He goes, yeah, it was Abby normal. That's the brain I brought back. Well, that's the brain that's been sold to us by Fauci, Abby normal. She says, as for me, I'm not so interested in normal. And I defer to Taylor Swift. We're never, never, ever going to get back together. Wait a minute. Taylor Swift? Taylor Swift stopped being normal a long, long time ago. She said it felt normal to want normal back at first. Last year, in those first few months, we were complaining about commuting, being too busy. That was the norm before COVID, BC, she said. See that? They don't want to call it before. She does that throughout the article. You have BC. She doesn't talk about AD, you know, after Fauci's domination, but BC, before coronavirus. Because to them, COVID is God, and Fauci is God, right? So we have BC, and then we have after Fauci domination. But she said, back in those early days, the mundane was what we craved. Packing into a subway car, grabbing an unplanned drink with a friend, hugging parents, striking up a conversation with a stranger. Yet all those normal desires felt entirely unfathomable. Would we ever be able to go back to a crowded space? If we could, would we want to? No, they don't. They now have obsessive compulsive disorder. They're washing their hands constantly. They admit that. We had another study that said, you know, more than half Americans are OCD now, constantly washing their hands like 20 times a day. And they're afraid of open spaces, agoraphobia, neurotic by design. Would we ever want to go back to a crowded space? No. The answer then felt like a definite no, especially with mortality and death constantly wailing in our ears. How was that happening? Was she seeing this happening on the streets? Was she in the hospitals that were empty? No, no. She was hearing the wailing in her ears from CNN and Fox. The fear of the unknown was like a blanket, but one that provided no comfort or warmth. Yeah, this guy, Eric Peters, is going to be joining us next hour. He talked about it being the face security blanket, and that's exactly what she's saying. It felt like a blanket, except I didn't get any comfort from it. Then, by then, she said, as things were, they were starting to say, well, we need to get back to normal. She said, by then, my brain was screaming, no way. Do others feel it too? Cringing every time new normal, old normal, any normal is uttered? That to go back, you would mean that we don't question the way things were? That we'd forget the lessons, good and bad, that have been learned? What are the lessons? Well, you got to stay masked up, locked down, and afraid. And so we have this article from Newsweek saying that unvaccinated Americans are returning to pre-pandemic activities at a higher rate than those who've had COVID shots. This is not surprising. The people who are getting the shots first, the ones who are climbing over other people to try to cut in line to get their shots, these are the people who are the most afraid. These are the people who are truly agoraphobic, who are truly OCD, who have had the panic ringing in their ears because they're watching CNN all the time. See, those of us who are unvaccinated, who never stopped going anywhere unless they stopped us at the door, I never adjusted any of my behavior. I refuse to trade with people who demand that I wear a mask, but other than that, nothing has changed. Well, that's a big change. But unvaccinated Americans are returning to their activities at a higher rate than those who've had the COVID shots because the ones who had the COVID shots are so afraid. Still, two shots and they're still afraid because they have been told also that their vaccine doesn't protect them. So they're going to be afraid, they're going to be locked down, and they're going to be getting increasingly angry and neurotic about those of us who refuse to get the vaccine. We're going to be the problem. Unvaccinated Americans have returned to pre-pandemic activities such as seeing friends and family outside of the home at higher rates than those who received the vaccine, according to a new poll. A survey conducted by Axios found that 52% of unvaccinated people returned to socializing, compared to only 41% of individuals who've gotten the shot. Those who have not been vaccinated are more likely to say that activities outside their home would not pose a risk to their health and well-being. Conversely, vaccinated individuals reported being more likely to social distance. Social distance. See, this is why I say, all of these businesses who are telling me that I can't come in if I don't wear a mask, I said, you're selling the rope of fear that's going to be used to hang you, because the people that you're pandering to, the people who will wear the masks, the people who will take the vaccines, they're going to be even more afraid to go out into open spaces like this woman. She said, I don't want a new normal. I don't want to go back to restaurants, and I don't want to sit in a movie theater with people around me who could be breathing on me and coughing, even if they wear a mask, even if they are vaccinated. Even if they are 6 feet away, I don't want to be there. I'm too afraid now because I've been listening to CNN. And if you business owners are going to do that, you're dead. Your business is going to fail because your business model is based on these neurotic, propagandized, brainwashed, gaslighted idiots to be your customers. And they're not going to come. You need people like me who are not afraid to walk out into an open space, but you won't let me in your business. And even after you do, I'm not coming back. So far, over 82 million people in the U.S. have received at least one dose of the vaccine, while 44 million have been fully inoculated, but they're still afraid to go out. The survey found that roughly 1 in 5 respondents said they were still not at all likely to receive the vaccine due to the government distrust, safety concerns, misinformation. Did anybody say that to them? Well, I don't think I'm going to get the vaccine because I've been given a lot of misinformation. That's editorializing by Newsweek. Or the belief that they're healthy without it. You know, as we saw yesterday, they decried these idiots who are afraid to put something in their body that hasn't been tested. That you've had thousands of people drop dead within 48 hours, sadly, that they don't seem to care about. Our op-ed piece by Damian Wilson on RT says, enough is enough. We cannot surrender our freedoms just because lockdowns have shown authoritarianism cannot curb or can curb society's excesses. And he says, here's another dangerous aspect of it. You know, we've talked about the gaslighting, the fear, the paranoia that's been sold to people with propaganda. We talked about the lust for power of the people who have taken this. But then there's another aspect of this They're trying to make a pragmatic argument. Now, part of it has been the green argument. Well, look at this. We've been able to reduce our CO2 output. But, as he said, a new report shows that drunkenness in Spain has plunged. So now governments are realizing that restrictions to, quote, protect public health can address other problems, and the public has to shake off its passiveness to prevent this from happening. In other words, they look at this and say, we're seeing a massive drop in teen use of booze because of lockdown. We're seeing a decline in teen drunk driving or whatever, and accidents and deaths from that. So let's keep these lockdowns going. That's the argument that they're making now. He said, this is really dangerous. He says, at some point in the future, when we look back at the unprecedented and seemingly interminable authoritarian restrictions many have been forced to live under over the last year, we should ask ourselves, what were we thinking? Exactly, what were we thinking? Especially the organizations that for the longest time have been talking about 9/11, false flags, and the unending desire of the government to rule every aspect of our lives. What were they thinking? Oh, they were thinking. They were thinking about how they were going to feather their nest financially. But the public has to shake off the passiveness to keep this from happening. Governments who brought in tough rules on movement, on personal freedom, seem to be dragging their heels over return to life as it was at the start of 2020. And there is a distinct lack of protest by the public over their tardiness. This attitude is playing in the hands of governments who've realized the significant gains to be made from keeping the public in check. They've tasted the authoritarian Kool-Aid and they kind of like it. This sadomasochism. How better to break up those irritating protests than by simply imposing curfews or by making gatherings of more than six people illegal? So this is how the Chinese communists, who sold us this Chinese virus of tyranny, of surveillance, of the police state, of social credits, of controls over your movement. This is how they cracked the protests in Hong Kong using the coronavirus. Oh, it's got a lot of upside for authoritarians in our government, as in every government worldwide. How better to cut down on specific problems like teen drinking than to make it impossible to buy booze or to drink with your pals in the park? We've stopped fighting back. We've stopped demanding accountability from our leaders. They've put freedom in our sights, but only if we don't overdo it, as Boris Johnson said. And it seems that has stopped us from even questioning the powers that be, leaving us prepared to tolerate the abuse of our freedom until after Easter this year, or maybe until the end of June, or wait, now it's autumn, or Christmas, or maybe even 2022. No, Gates said the end of 2022. The longer we wait, the longer we allow unchecked authoritarian rule to push us around under the guise of leadership during a public health crisis, the harder it will be to cast off the shackles once this is all over. And we only have ourselves to blame. Let me tell you, the unchecked authoritarian rule is coming from the technocrat billionaires like Gates and the bureaucrats like Fauci, who work with him, and the useful idiots, the preening politicians that give you the illusion of public control, like Trump or Biden. So Fauci is now saying that kids need to wear masks, need to wear masks. Let me play that clip for you.
When the children go out into the community, you want them to continue to wear masks when they're interacting with groups from multiple households. When we talk about what you can do when you're vaccinated, you can certainly have members of a family, if the adults are vaccinated, and you're in the home with your child, you don't need to wear a mask and you can have physical contact.
There you go. So, if you're at home with a child, he's graciously saying that you don't need to wear a mask to have physical contact if you're in the home with your child. Isn't that nice that we have his permission to do that? But, of course, if your kids are going to be out playing together, they do need to wear the mask. They do need to wear the mask. When the kids go out into the community, you want them to continue to wear the mask. Well, you know, while they're interacting with groups or, you know, multiple households there. He said the children could conceivably be able to engage in summer camps, but only if the vaccinations continue. That's right. So listen to him, because it is so important that we do everything that he tells us. I want to take a quick look at what is happening with the vaccines. We have a report about Excelsior that comes out of New York, telling you all the benefits of how this wonderful program is going to save all of us. Here's what they say about Excelsior.
We are getting a glimpse at how our post-pandemic world could operate. New York rolling out a new app some people call a COVID passport, a one-stop shop that stores your tests and vaccine status and notifies businesses and venues. Adam, how does it work?
Well, Gemma, we know testing is so important to making sure that venues like Madison Square Garden behind us can open up safely. The city and state now promoting this new app that they hope will serve as essentially a COVID passport. Like when you go to the airport,
it's a passport.
You've got all of your documents in one place.
The first of its kind app will serve as almost a COVID passport for anyone to use at major sports and entertainment venues. It will authenticate someone's vaccination or show proof of a recent negative COVID test. It all sounds like a win to Father Louis Skirty.
Very convenient because I have both shots and I have, of course, the card. And I laminated it just so I always have it with me. But the idea of having it as an app and just showing it where you go, whatever venues, I think it's a great idea. Very convenient.
It's so convenient. Isn't that nice? It's just so convenient. As Vince Agnelli writes and sent me a copy of this to freeholders that he's working with in Virginia. Just a little reminder that freeholders, a little something about how fast your old USA is disappearing. One of numerous stories out this past week about how vaccine passports are going to be with us, going to be required for you to move around and to shop and even buy food, because people do not resist. And they go to stores with their masks on. And they go to stores that push mask wearing and vaccines on us. We have no place for freeholders to meet and to shop with each other for food, goods, and services because we've planned for it, but we've seen nothing yet because the longer we wait to make the serious effort to start a new government, to replace the one that is guilty of maladministration, the more impossible it will be to revive our state and our nation. Notice how the Republican Party avoids even talking about your right to conduct your own affairs and the right about deciding what you're going to put in your body. But wait, instead, it's all about the Second Amendment, Second Amendment, Second Amendment. Second Amendment is important. But if we use the Tenth Amendment, if we respected our individual liberties, we wouldn't be going down this path. Biden, of course, is following up on the Excelsior that they just showed you, how wonderful that works. Biden is working on a vaccine passport scheme to reopen the U.S., reports The Sun, and it sounds exactly like what Cuomo and de Blasio are rolling out in New York. Surprise. What a surprise. They'll be available for people on their smartphones. They'll be able to flash a scannable code, as you just saw there. New York State officials launched the digital Excelsior Pass. Similar to a mobile airline boarding pass, it uses a secure QR code. Brian Kastrucki, head of the Maryland-based the Beaumont Foundation, told the Washington Post, if it became a government mandate, it would go down a dark road very quickly. The passport, if it becomes a credential, it will become a needing your papers, if you will. That could be dangerous, and it could turn people off. Let me tell you somebody who is really turned off about this. This is a 92-year-old woman. She said she survived the Holocaust, and I want you to hear what she has to say about this being even more dangerous than the yellow stars of what the Nazis did when she was young.
I am, in fact, a survivor of the Holocaust, and the first thing I have to tell you, that even then, nobody told us it was done for our own good. We all knew what was happening. And when I think today, when I see people march, I think of the yellow star, which gave everybody liberty to aggress me, to insult me, to call me a carrier of disease, to spit on me even.
I love you.
I would like to tell you that this is worse. It is more insidious. It concerns more people. There is a hypocrisy in the public narrative that is absolutely unbearable, to say that we're doing this to protect the old. I would love to die in a state that gives me freedom to live and live. Already outstayed my welcome by many years, and my life expectancy is probably not great, but I would gladly exchange this for the lives and livelihoods and happiness of generations that come after me to live their lives as I have been. To have masked, to see people defile their children with masks is something totally unbearable to me.
Me too.
And I would like to say one word, short word, about obedience. It's been said you're not allowed to obey. And if you obey someone who wants you to do evil, then you don't obey. You cooperate.
She said, defiling children with masks, it makes her sick to see that. It makes me sick to see that as well. You know, when she was in Nazi Germany, they had to wear the yellow star. And she said that was that allowed people to insult me, to spit on me, to call me a carrier of disease. But of course, this is nothing at all like that, right? This is exactly the opposite. Those of us who don't want to play along with this, we don't have to wear a yellow star. It's completely opposite. You see, you wear the mask, and if you don't wear the mask, that's like wearing the yellow star. See, it's not the same at all. This isn't Nazi Germany. Because in Nazi Germany, you had to wear the yellow star. Here, you don't have to wear anything. And if you don't wear the mask, you get insulted, spit upon, called a carrier of disease, not allowed to sit at the lunchroom counter or ride the bus or do anything else like that. That's completely opposite. And of course, if you have your identity papers, please, then you'll be fine. But those of us who don't have the identity papers, we'll be living under Nazi-occupied America, occupied by the Nazi agenda of a real Nazi, Klaus Schwab, of the World Economic Forum at Davos. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to bring Eric Peters, EP Autos, on. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about the moves by Buttigieg to, Pothole Pete was what they called him when he was mayor, and he's going to work on our infrastructure. How's that going to turn out? Well, they got $3 or $4 billion to throw at it. They could fill some potholes, but that's not going to be what they're going to be working on. We'll talk about what they're going to work on. We'll talk about the scheme to tax vehicles by the mile and many other things with Eric, epautos.com, coming up right after this break. Here's where you can find us and how you can support us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, joining us now is Eric Peters. His website is epautos.com. He talks about mobility and freedom. You know, those two things used to always go together, and they still do. And they're trying to destroy both of those, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. Of course, Our mobility has been severely hampered by all the lockdown issues and the masks and other things like that, but they're not going to rest there. These people are tireless tyrants, and they've got another plan for us. We have the $3 to $4 trillion, but, you know, who's counting? They don't know. Is it going to be $3 or $4 trillion here, a trillion there? Pretty soon, you're talking about digital dollars, right? Not even real money.
Does it even matter anymore?
That's right. It doesn't even matter, Eric, does it? And so this is what Eric and I have been talking about this a long time. They're going to be rolling out, money is no object, this infrastructure for electric cars, and then going along with that, now because everybody's got to have electric car, we've got to tax you by the mile because we're not selling you fuel anymore, and then that puts another nose of the camel, or the hydra, if you will, under your tent. So joining us now is Eric Peters. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
Oh, you bet. I'm here wearing my plague doctor mask because I worry about opening the door and finding somebody with a syringe waiting to jab me on the other side.
It's getting crazy, isn't it? We just have to, you know, at some point, we just have to stop arguing with these people because they don't want to hear any, they don't want to see any charts, even their own charts. They don't want to argue about the reality of informed consent. So we just have to say, no, I have that. I'm going to stand on that. I don't really care what you think. You're not going to shame me.
Yeah,
you're not
right.
Going to coerce me.
This is whack-a-mole. It doesn't matter how many facts you present and how many of their so-called arguments you disprove, they'll come up with something else. They're constantly shifting the goalposts.
That's right. Yeah, Doug Wilson, I played a clip of Doug Wilson yesterday, and he said, I've said for the longest time, Doug Wilson said, this is an argument over the dictionary. And he goes, and I'm not interested in arguing definitions with them. I'm going to tell them, you don't get to write the you don't get to edit the dictionary. I'm sorry. We're just not going to go down that path.
Yeah, remember Humpty Dumpty who said, a word means exactly what I choose it to mean, nothing more and nothing less.
That's right. I don't think we're going to be able to put him back together again either. He had a big fall in 2020.
This mileage tax, I think what people need to understand about the mileage tax is, among other things, it's going to be a double tax. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a replacement for the current motor fuels tax, which, by the way, speaking of that, gas is now what, about, on average nationally, it's about a dollar more than it was before the selection. And people really ought to get out their calculators and look at how much they're spending. And if they do that, they're going to find that this year alone they'll have spent more than their government sucker check that was sent out to them as part of the Corona stimulus package.
Yeah. And that's a big part of that because, you know, they can come out with outright bans. But the way these people typically do stuff is they reward you financially to do what they want to do. And then they punish you to not, you know, so that you don't do the things they don't want. So they're going to punish us with higher gas prices. And then they're going to punish us with a double tax, a mileage tax.
Yes.
But I'm also worried about that black box that they put in the cars.
Very much so. Exactly. And that also has multiple aspects to it. The way that they're going to keep track of your mileage is via the connected car technology that almost all cars built over the course of the last 15 years or even 20 years already have. It's not necessary for somebody to open the door of your car and look at your odometer when they can just receive that over the air through the apps and infotainment system that your car already contains and which you consented to let them have access to when you bought the vehicle through the EULA, the User Lease Agreement document, which most people have never read through, and they really should have before they signed that or even bought the car.
Yeah, and when we look at how this is going to roll out, we don't really have to have a crystal ball. We can just look at the news headlines from Europe. From the UK, for example, insurance has gotten so unaffordable over there for young people that the only way that most young people can afford to have a car is if siblings go in a partnership for the insurance.
And then they still can't
afford it unless they get the insurance, which puts a black box in their car. That limits the number of miles that they can drive, and so they have to negotiate with each other as to how many miles each of them are going to drive the thing. And then it monitors everything. Literally everything about the way they drive and sends all that information back to the insurance company, presumably back to the police, if you violate the arbitrary speed limits.
Right now, it doesn't matter how far you drive in terms of how much you're mulcted by the insurance company, because the only legitimate basis or the only practicable basis that they have for adjusting your premium is if you file a claim or have a claim filed against you or if you get some sort of traffic ticket. You could drive 40,000 miles a year, and as long as you haven't hit anybody or nobody hit you or you don't have a ticket, you're fine. They desperately want to apply a tax by mile because it's another revenue stream for them from the people who are the most profitable, which are the people who are good drivers and never file a claim or have a claim filed against them but do a lot of driving.
That's right. And it's another way, and this is where this all rolls together. A lot of people mistakenly believe that this is an effort to save the environment. And this is not an effort to save the environment. This is an effort to outlaw the individual control of the individual car that you own and your ability to control it. That's why these electric vehicle companies like Tesla, Elon Musk is focused on the auto driving aspect of this. But it's also why they're putting this box into your car, because it's the insurance company connection that will make it more unaffordable than the double tax for people who have a fuel-based internal combustion engine. And it will make it unaffordable even for the people who have fully electric cars, because now the insurance equation that comes in here is the thing that's going to make it unaffordable for people to own private cars. And that's what they've ultimately been after. They want to eliminate all private cars so that they can control all of your movement, all of your transportation goes through public transportation or the airlines. And we know how that looks now because I can't fly anymore.
Well, think how convenient it will become the next lockdown when they can literally throw a switch and brick your vehicle through the same telematics that they'll be using to track you. And a lot of people don't realize that a given piece of information, for example, what the reading of your odometer happens to be at any given moment, is simply one piece of data that's contained within the black box, within the computer of the vehicle. And if they have access to your odometer reading, they have access to everything about the vehicle in terms of how it's used, where it's driven, how fast you drive, whether you came to a complete stop at every single stop sign, whether you accelerated too aggressively, as they define it, or swerved, or did any manner of other things that will make driving both exorbitantly expensive as well as insufferably unpleasant. And both of those things coalesce together to get people to say, you know what, this isn't worth it to me anymore. I'm going to be a good little proletarian and ride the bus.
That's right. Yeah. How fast you accelerate, how fast you brake, how fast you turn, and because they have GPS capability as well, as you pointed out, did you stop enough at that stop sign? Well, we can instantly give you a fine for your speeding or you're, you're not stopping long enough, all this stuff. I mean, it will be absolutely too much of an expense, too much of a hassle to own a private car. And that's what these people have been after forever. Yep. Going back to the 1980s, Eric, I went to a Raleigh City Council meeting. There was a woman there, and I've told this story multiple times. The listeners may have heard it. But there was a woman who had just come back from the Soviet Union. This is before the Soviet Union fell. And she was talking about how we needed to have a light rail system in a small town of low-density population like Raleigh. And she said, you know, people can go anywhere they want for just a nickel on the Moscow subway. And I said, it costs them everything. It costs them everything to have that nickel ride on the Moscow freeway.
Right. Right. They've lost all their freedom. Their ability to go where they'd like to go on their own schedule quickly and efficiently. Now they stand in line and do as they're told, and that's the future these people have envisioned for us.
That's right. Let's talk a little bit about the massive waste that's coming because, and I said this from the very beginning, as soon as I saw Joe Biden put in Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pothole Pete, they called him, right? because he did never fix the roads. And I said, you know, that is really the easiest way for these people to do road calming. You know, they'll call it road calming if they put speed bumps in the road, right? But you don't have to spend the money to make a bump. You can just not spend the money and leave the hole there, right? Or you can do, you can use the potholes to do road calming, which is the other thing they do when they are, you know, road diet, rather, where they narrow the road by putting bicycle lanes on there. But I said, we got somebody like Pete Buttigieg. You know that he's going to push electric cars and this kind of infrastructure, and it's going to be money is no object. And here we are, $3 to $4 trillion. This will be bigger than any of the pandemic, quote-unquote, relief bills that went to the fat cats and not to the rest of us. It's going to be much bigger than any of these relief bills, and it's going to be pushing a government-provided electric infrastructure to allow them to continue to push us in this direction that they've been pushing us with subsidies to Elon Musk and other providers of electric cars.
Isn't it interesting, I think, that you and I are among the handful of people who even raise our hands and question, what is this guy doing as the head of the Department of Transportation?
Exactly.
What exactly, what are this guy's qualifications? I mean, he has absolutely none. He's a liberal arts political hack ex-mayor of a small town, relatively small town, who has been given decidership power over the country's mobility. It's the damnedest thing.
Oh, he's worse than that. He is a hardcore Marxist. His daddy at Notre Dame University taught there. And his specialty was the guy who became his father's life work was about the Italian who founded the Italian
Gramsci.
Marxist. Yeah, Gramsci. Yeah, and his dad made sure that he got Buttigieg to Harvard where he could study under a guy who changed his name to honor Sacco and Vanzetti. He called himself Sacvan Berkovich. Right, and so
wonderful.
Yeah, yep. And so that's his pedigree. This guy is a dyed-in-the-wool Marxist. So they want to focus
so
on him being gay, but he's really a Marxist. He's a closet Marxist. He's openly gay, but he's a closet Marxist.
Yep. Yeah. Well, just like you know, Elon Musk's father was one of the founders of the technocratic movement back in the 1920s.
That's right.
And very few
Haldeman,
people are
right?
aware
Joshua
of that.
Haldeman.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
That's right. Very few people are aware of this, and of course, that's the you can lay that at the feet of the media. I hate to even use that word because they're not; they're simply a kind of organ of the corporate government nexus, repeating whatever press sheets the government and corporations put out.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, he tried to overthrow the government of Canada. They put him on trial. He beat the rap, and then he beat it out of town to South Africa. That's why Elon Musk is coming back from South Africa. That was back in the 1930s when. Technocracy was the up-and-coming thing with all the intelligentsia.
Yep.
They thought it was a great thing. They still do. They just don't want to talk about it. It's kind of like the eugenics movement, right? Both of those things go hand in glove. And that's what they're now imposing on us. You know, did you see that video that it was taken down very rapidly? Somebody put together a 12-minute video about Elon Musk, and all it was just Elon Musk talking about all mm-hmm. the different pronouncements he made about when he was going to have fully autonomous cars and when you were going to be able to buy a Tesla taxi and what a great investment that was going to be. And going back a number of years and say, oh, yeah, by next year we'll have this and we'll have that. One series of hype, you know, stories about hype and lies after the other. They put that thing together, and it didn't last a day on YouTube. So then they put it on Vimeo. Vimeo took it down. They put it on Veo. Veo took it down. I mean, everywhere this thing is going up, it's being taken down. So people are writing about it, but it's pretty hard to find it.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised by that. And I'm also not surprised to hear him use the word investment, which our friend Buttigieg also likes to use when he's talking about this mileage tax. Now, you and I would think about that in ordinary, reasonable terms in the context of the tax that's applied to the gas we buy. It's actually a valid term in that the taxes are used to build and maintain the road infrastructure. But mm-hmm. Buttigieg and the Harris-Biden team have an altogether different definition of that word. They mean it to be an investment in climate change, and that's his words, not mine. So essentially the point of it being you're going to get out of your car and into public transport, and that will be your investment in the climate-changing future that they have in mind for us.
You know, Eric, don't you find it strange that when these people spend $3 trillion, then $2 trillions, then talk about spending $3 to $4 trillion, we don't even know. We don't even care now. When they're spending money like that, don't you find it strange that Biden and Buttigieg and all these people be so focused on taxes? What difference does taxes make, right? Why do we have? We're not going to balance the budget. There's no way the budget's going to be balanced. They could take everything from us. They could take more than they gave us in the little stimulus check, which I never got, but... You know, they could take everything from us, and they would still have a deficit. So why do they care? It's about control, isn't it?
Well, that's just the point. They have the ability to create and manipulate money, in air quotes, which is just digitized entries at this point, at their whim, whereas, you know, the taxes that are applied are a diminution of our wealth, however achieved, whether it's via the inflation of the currency, and now you pay $6 for a 12-ounce pack of bacon that used to cost you $3 for 16 ounces, or $40 for a 4x8 sheet down at Lowe's that used to cost you $22, or to make it so impossibly expensive for you to own a car or to drive a car that you throw your hands up at the sky and say, the heck with that, I guess I will just move into my urban proletariat little apartment, and that'll be my grand new normal life from here on out.
That's right. You'll own nothing. You'll go nowhere. You'll take what they offer you. But they have absolutely, with their modern monetary theory, MMT, I call it the magic money tree, they don't worry about the amount of money that they're spending. So why are they worried about taxes? And I think it's mm-hmm. because they want to make sure that you don't have any discretion at all in your life, that you own nothing, right? So that's why
they have to
tax what little you have away from you, even as they're not worried in the least about any kind of fiscal accountability. I pointed out when Trump was spending $3.5 trillion, I said, you realize that if you were to print dollar bills, if you could find enough trees to print $3.5 trillion, and if you were to stack them one on top of the other, it would reach from the earth to the moon. Mm-hmm. This is why they're creating digital cash, because we're going into warp speed, we're going into hyperinflation. And they don't care. They just want to take whatever money you got away from you.
That's right, because, again, it is about reducing your radius of action to limit and constrain and control you. That is the common thread, the common denominator going through all of these things that we're talking about.
You know, you had a great article last week, and I talked about it on the show, talking about why we can't have nice things, or why we can't, comparing the truck that General Motors sells in China versus what you have to pay for here in America. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, it looked like a pretty sharp little design for a truck. The sides went down. It was a smaller truck. The sides went down. And if you folded down the sides, like you can fold down the tailgate, you would wind up with a bed that was more practical than what you get off of a full-sized pickup truck here in the U.S.
Sure. And isn't it ironic that General Motors will sell that in China? Aren't we freer than China? and there's two reasons for that. The first reason, of course, is that it's very difficult to get a vehicle like that to comply with the myriad federal requirements. For example, that fold-out bed would probably present an issue in terms of complying with side impact, bumper impact, and rollover standards. So we can't have that.
Yep.
But there's another element to it. General Motors doesn't want to sell you a $9,000 truck. They want to indenture you to a 6 to 7 year loan on a $50,000 truck.
That's right.
That's what they want.
Yeah.
They don't want you to have a truck that you can maintain yourself because it's simple and it doesn't have a lot of complex folder roll and it's not connected to a hive mind electronic brain somewhere. They don't want that. They've been explicit about it. What they want, and it's not just GM, unfortunately, it's most of the industry, they want to hook you into transportation as a service, as you and I have talked about, which means insert you to a monthly payment plan that is analogous to what you pay for your cell phone forever. You will, as Schwab says, you will own nothing, you will rent everything, and you'll be happy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, they've gone, as you pointed out many times, they've gone from a model where they sell stuff, and then they started, well, it's so unaffordable that we'll lease it to you. Now we'll lease it to you over a 7 year period. And now what we'll do is we'll just rent it to you by the ride. And that's really where they want to be. They're all calling themselves mobility companies, but they're taking away our mobility.
Yeah, and an interesting question that people don't follow up on. Okay, if we're going to own nothing, well, then who's going to own everything?
Yeah. Right.
They are going to own everything.
Yeah.
So,
we know.
I mean, it's right in your face. The 1% are going to own everything, and the 99% of us are going to like it. That's what they're telling us.
Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. People cannot make the connection. They're just saying to you, right to your face, I'm taking everything from you. I'm just taking everything. And it's a cooperation between the corporations and the governments. It's pure fascism. That's the definition, the economic definition of fascism. Most people think, well, fascism, that's Hitler and Mussolini. Mm-hmm. That's hyper-nationalism. Yep. No. Fascism, they call themselves socialist. Fascism is about using the corporations to get and to keep power. It's about making an economic alliance between the two of them. And that's
really
what we're
seeing now. I think it's really even worse than that. I use the term ensurfing. And it's a reference to the Middle Ages in Europe, as you know, where most people had nothing. They owned nothing, but they weren't very happy. If you think about it, if you don't own something, you have no control over it. You're beholden to whoever does own it. You have to ask for permission to use it. You can only use it the way they allow you to use it. A lot of people are very simple-minded, almost childish, in that they think, oh, we're going to have all this great stuff. Look, I can just, I can tap an app on my phone and it'll magically appear. They don't understand that it will only appear provided they are good little serfs, do what they're told, and are allowed to use it only in a certain limited way. When you contrast that with what you can do when you own something, you possess it, it's yours,
right.
It's mine, I'll do what I want with it. Think about how wonderful that is and what we're about to throw away for the sake of this infantilized version of the future.
It reminds me of that scene from Monty Python where Arthur shows up. Who are you? I'm Arthur, king of the... Well, I didn't vote for you. We're an autonomous collective. That's what we need to tell these people. I didn't vote for Bill Gates. We are an autonomous collective, and we need to start taking back our lives at the local level, civil disobedience, nullification. We start from the from our own homes, from our own lives, you know, asserting our own independence and then doing that within our family, within our neighborhood, within our community. And we need to build this back from the ground up. And that, even if we have to sit there in the mud stacking mud pies like these guys did in Monty Python, that's preferable to being the servant for King Arthur, you know, hopping along with him, banging a couple of coconuts together to keep the illusion going, right?
The antidote to centralization is decentralization.
Yep.
And that is how we cut the cord from all of this. And yes, it might mean that our lives are a little bit more complicated and a little more difficult, but it could also mean that our lives are infinitely more free and less oppressive than they've become.
That's right. How are you feeling about this vaccine passport? You know, we've had the Excelsior rolled out in New York, and it didn't take but a day for Biden to say, yeah, we're going to do that nationally as well. Do you know, Eric, I had forgotten what Excelsior represent. It was shaved wood shavings that were very fine and curled, and they would use them to pack fragile items close together. And that's the way they're going to use the Excelsior Pass. They're going to use it to pack all these fragile people who've been scared to death by CNN. They can pack them very tightly into Madison Square Gardens using the Excelsior Pass.
Well, I think it's worse than that. You know, it is of a means by which they are going to first marginalize and then pariahize the people like you and I who haven't fallen for it and refuse to play sickness kabuki, refuse for very sound reasons to allow a fingers air quote vaccine of unknown provenance, the manufacturer of which is immune from any liability for harms caused, to be injected into our perfectly healthy bodies with God knows what repercussions. They are going to set us aside as a sort of underclass, an untouchable group of people, and exclude us from life as the punishment for our exercising critical thinking skills and asking legitimate questions.
You know, I played that clip. I don't know if you heard it just before we cut to you. You might have been on the line. The 92-year-old Holocaust survivor. Did you hear that clip?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Isn't that amazing? She was spot on. And she said, I'm 92 years old. I would rather die in a free country than to go through this stuff. And it is disgusting to see people defiling their children with these masks. And it is a defilement.
Yes.
It's a defilement of their humanity. It's a defilement of their freedom and their dignity. And it is a physical, biological defilement to put those filthy things on their
masks. It's the penetration of your body. I mean, that's the very definition of what a defilement is.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we know exactly where this is headed. She knows where it's headed. And it's very troubling because if you look at the writings of Solzhenitsyn, if you look at what Rod Dreher did, and he named his book after an essay of Solzhenitsyn, I recorded that. I'm going to post that up, probably do that today. I'd sent that out to people who were subscribers. I'm going to post that up for everybody to hear. But Solzhenitsyn wrote an essay before they kicked him out of the country called Live Not by Lies. Rod Dreher was talking to people who had survived being in a totalitarian countries like Hitler's Germany, mostly, though, communist countries. And he said these elderly people, like this 92-year-old woman, said, I'm scared to death because I'm seeing exactly what happened in our country happening here very fast. And I think it's even worse because William Binney, who I've interviewed multiple times, said when I talked to him, he said, what we have already is far worse than the Stasi had because of technology and the leverage they have with that. He spent decades monitoring the Stasi as the global technical head of the NSA, and he says what we already have is far worse than the Stasi. They could only dream of the kind of capabilities that the U.S. government has at this point.
Well, sure, and it's far worse because unlike when East Germany existed, when there was an America that people could flee to, there is nowhere left in the world to flee to unless you're willing to go to Antarctica.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no, they're going to be fighting a war between Russia, China, and the U.S. on Antarctica. They're already talking about that. Yeah, it's going to be Ice Station Zebra all over again. What?
We bring up this thing about the German parallels, and I've written about and talked about before another that I find extraordinarily ominous, and it is that the German Nazis referred to the Jews and other people they characterized as enemies as a biological threat. They would use terms like bacillus.
Yes, that's what you said. They called me diseased.
And characterized the necessity of removing the bacillus to maintain the health of the body politic. So literally the same language now is being used. And, of course, we have the antecedent of very German terms like homeland security. Reinhard Heydrich, the head of the Nazi security police, the Heimatsicherheitsdienst, the Homeland Security Department. And now we have the same thing in America. And I was ranting about that 20 years ago, and people thought I was nuts, and here we are today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they didn't use the term Der Vaterland because that was too misogynistic, right? We have to have a gender-neutral fascist government. So we call it Homeland, right?
Yep.
I mean,
you know, and people don't see it, as you said, because they don't see the jackboots and they don't see the, you know, the marching troops and all of that. But the fundamentals are identical.
Yes. And the people who realize this, the people like Rod Dreher and the people who are refugees from living in that system or the children of refugees living under that system, what they call it is a soft totalitarianism because you don't see so much of the violence. I mean, we saw some of that in Australia, in Victoria, the state of Victoria, in the city of Melbourne. We saw that kind of jackbooted thugism. But we haven't seen it here in America that much yet. But we will. We will see it here. But right now, it's a soft totalitarianism. It seeks to control your thoughts. It seeks to demand your consent. And that's what all this cancel culture and the social media mobs are really about. It's about mind control and getting you to submit to their agenda. That's why to call it cultural Marxism is just not strong enough. It's far worse, far more dangerous than that.
Yeah, and they're using economic terrorism to enforce it. They've got everybody living in fear because everybody's in debt, or most people are in debt, of losing their job, of not being able to get a job, to cow and truckle and to put on their face diaper and to get their jab because, you know, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to pay my bills. I'm not going to be able to put food on the table and feed my family. So I'll just do it. Even though I don't like it, I'm going to go along to get along. And what does that sound like?
Well, it's exactly what we saw in the Soviet system, and it's exactly what Solzhenitsyn was talking about. He said, we know that if we say the wrong thing to the wrong people, or the wrong people realize what we're talking about, that we will lose our job, we'll lose our home, we won't be able to eat. And that's the kind of leverage they've now been able to establish over us with this lockdown. It's this kind of subtle Marxism that was imposed on us with Trump and the lockdown. That's exactly what he did, saying that your business is not essential. You're not going to be allowed to work. You're not going to be allowed to travel and so forth. You're going to have to wait for a handout. They're hand-feeding us into universal basic income, which is nothing other than neo-Marxism pushed by the Silicon Valley technocrats.
Sure, and there's a tangent here that's relevant. For at least a generation, if not two or three generations, the formerly frugal nature of most Americans, which meant that generally people would try to avoid debt, try to buy only what they could afford, to save. Those values are no longer common values. They have shifted everything around so that people are comfortable living in debt and taking on more debt. And that the lure of that is, oh, I can have a bigger house. Oh, I can have a new car. I can have all these things that I want. But what you don't have anymore is your liberty and your freedom. You're now beholden to these entities, to the corporations and the government upon which your ability to exist now depends.
What are you seeing there in Virginia? What are you seeing in terms of the mask mandates? I mean, does Northern probably still has on a state mask mandate? Is that correct?
That's correct. But the strange thing is it's largely not being enforced. And yet compliance is up. As a measure of it, I go almost every single day to my local supermarket to literally see how many faces I can see. And it's become very rare for me to see another face in the Kroger, notwithstanding that all there is a little Stalinist sign on the door, but there's absolutely no enforcement. Nobody says anything. You can go about your business. But nonetheless, people have been so conditioned to this, I think, that they just do it reflexively now, as people probably in Germany wore their armbands reflexively, because that's just what everybody does. It's not legal pressure anymore. It is social pressure. People don't want to be seen as an outlier. I don't care, but you know, you and I and other outliers who are actually not out of our minds with fear are unfortunately in the minority in this country right now.
That's right, because we want to kick the liars out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's why we're outliers. Well, we keep going around saying outliers. Get out of the government.
I do not wish to participate in the perpetuation of a vicious and evil lie. And this is what Solzhenitsyn talked about. Also, you know, this idea of you put this thing on your face, you are affirming that it's legitimate to walk around with this thing on, and it's not. You're
that's
enabling
right.
it. You're furthering it. And I will not do that ever under any circumstances.
Well, and that's what we saw here. You know, we had our mask mandates under Abbott, lasted for about 9 months. Mm-hmm. And as he started to put on these social distance things, and you started to have these zealots in certain urban areas who were going around and attacking churches for meeting, right? And so he realized that was going to be a hot spot of resistance. And so he immediately pulled back from that. And then when he wanted to have his election, he said, and now you don't have to wear masks at the election, at the polling places, because, you know, you can't get sick there. And then they pulled back a little bit for the restaurants and said, you can go to the restaurants, but you got to wear a mask for the 5 feet that you go to the table. Now we've had a situation where they, because this has gone on for several months, as you pointed out, we noticed as we're going around, fewer and fewer people were going around with a butt naked face like us, right? Mm-hmm. So most of them, you know, were wearing the face diaper. And now you've got the businesses who would tell me when I would talk to them and say, you know, that this is ridiculous that I have to wear it for 5 feet, but then I can sit there for a couple of hours. Oh, yeah, I know, but it's about compliance. I said, well, then fine. If that's the way you're going to be, you'll never see me again, even after this insanity is over, if it does ever, in fact, end. These people have owned it, and now that the state mandate has been taken off, these same businesses that kicked me out, I'm seeing articles in the local paper where they're talking to the reporters and they say, oh, no, we think it's very important. We're going to continue to force our customers to wear this. First restaurant that kicked me out was the first one that they quoted saying, we're going to keep that mask mandate. And they have now bought into this. The public has bought into this. I just read an op-ed piece earlier talking about this woman says, I don't want to go back to the new normal. I like this. I'm afraid of open spaces.
Yeah. People should read the story of Stalin's Chicken. Do you know the story of Stalin's Chicken?
No, I don't know that one. Tell us.
A visitor came to meet Stalin one day and asked Stalin how he manages to keep control over a nation of, I think at the time it was almost 200 million people, and this is in the 30s, which was a tremendous number back in the 30s. And he showed how he did it by having a chicken brought in, which he promptly proceeded to very, very callously and viciously pluck until it was shorn of all its feathers. And the chicken went cringing and running into the corner. And then Stalin brought out a little bit of food from one of his pockets and sprinkled the food on the floor. And the chicken came over and started pecking at the food. And he said to his guest, that's how I do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's how Trump did it, too, right? That mother plucker, what he did to us this last year, that's exactly what he did. He plucked us of every one of our freedoms and then gave us a little bit of a hand feeding, right? And that model has been continued on. But, you know, it couldn't be Trump because he's a good guy. He's a Republican. He's going to make America great again. No, he made America great reset is what he made America.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to write about that. He just came out apparently today or yesterday denouncing Fauci and Brooks. And I thought to myself, yeah, thanks, as you say, motherfucker, for doing that now rather than when it mattered. You know, this guy was in a position he could have done something to thwart, prevent, or at least oppose the weaponization of hypochondria.
Oh,
what did he do? He enabled it.
Yeah, he said to his voters, should I fire Fauci? You know, they're yelling at him, fire Fauci. Should I do that? Well, maybe I'll do that after the election. Vote for me. He's such a cynical manipulator, such a cynical narcissist. And quite frankly, I don't believe that he was as stupid about this stuff as everybody wants to think he is, right? He would talk about hydroxychloroquine, and then he would talk about injecting bleach into your veins, and then he would sit there while Fauci just cluck, cluck, oh, no, you just don't know what you're talking about. You need to listen to the scientists like me, not Trump and his followers who are talking about hydroxychloroquine. Trump deliberately made that a mockery, made it unbelievable. It's one of the best. You know, he's one of the best double agents I've ever seen for the Davos crowd.
Oh, I agree with you. And I've lost a number of conservative friends over this, over my criticism of the Orange Man, who, you know, they'll continue to nurse their grievances about the election that they say is stolen, and maybe so. And I point to them and say, well, you know what? It perhaps wouldn't have been stolen if Trump had not allowed the hypochondria to be weaponized and if he had minimally insisted that mass absentee ballots be vetted before they're counted,
which
he didn't do.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I said for months before it happened, I said, okay, he's too afraid to go up against Fauci and to have a convention or to have rallies. He's just playing it. He wants this to happen. And that's why I wouldn't support any of the Stop the Steal stuff. And it's why 2 days after after the election, on InfoWars, you had Steve Pachinik saying, "Well, this is all just a sting. Trump put out watermarked ballots, and he's already sent 20,000 troops out, and they've already started the arrest." He said that 2 days after the election. I said, This is a blatant lie, but they didn't want to hear that at InfoWars, so they can continue down their fantasy path without me. But, you know, that's where all this went. All the Stop the Steal stuff, that was a grifting operation by Trump and by the people like Alexander, Ali Akbar, Alex Jones, to make millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. Trump made $250 million. I don't know how much InfoWars made, but they made a lot of money off of that. Let me tell you, he's paying $50,000 to speak at these rallies.
It's as tragic as it is vicious.
Yeah,
Trump succeeded in allowing the characterization of anybody who opposes this authoritarian woke leftism as some kind of Yahoo redneck imbecile, white supremacist, Ku Klux Klan kind of a person. You know, and it's just it's something that's unforgivable, and I'll never forgive him for that.
And even after this, he's not defending the people who went to Washington to defend him, right? At the last, at, not even the 11th hour. It was 11:59 and 59 seconds. I mean, this is not even a Hail Mary throwing the basketball down the other end. There was absolutely no way that was going to work. They'd done no preparation for that whatsoever. But he threw them under the bus. But now he is consciously going after, still pushing the vaccine to his supporters, and they're using him because they know that his supporters are the ones who are the most reluctant to take the vaccine, and he is now, he knows about vaccines. He knew about vaccines before, and now he is pushing these untested vaccines on his own supporters. That is the most reprehensible. He never stops.
Isn't it really ironic that these people, and I mean the blind Trump faith followers, are as blind in their faith as the face diaper people? And they don't see that, of course, but it's the truth.
That's right, yeah. And it is something that is very scary, in the same way that I was very scared of Obama and the worshiping of Obama. And the idea that these people were, you know, we had big crowds, but we had bigger crowds under Trump. And we had people who were projecting their values onto Obama. And afterwards, you had people talking about, well, who is this guy? We don't know who Obama is. We just projected our values on him. The same thing is true of Trump, but it's much bigger, much deeper, much longer. Even after this guy is gone, even after we've seen everything that happened last year and everything that's happened in the aftermath of the election, everything that's going on with the vaccines, even still, you have the Trump crowd still projecting their values onto Trump. They don't know who this guy is. Any more than the people who supported Obama knew who he was. But it is much bigger, much deeper, the derangement syndrome on the right, than it was even for the Obama crowd, which frightened me. But it's this partisanship that is ripping the country apart, and the establishment is using that to create
a
civil war. The same way that they pit different ethnic groups against each other, they're pitting different political groups who are following a party or following a politician against each other.
I agree with you completely, and I think what worries me, what frightens me, is that it may not be over.
No.
I think it's entirely possible that our favorite orange stalking horse could return and succeed in further marginalizing and disfranchising any credible opposition to what's going on.
That's right.
And I think, you know,
well, he's a very profitable franchise.
That's his job. His job is, you know, he's as you say, he's a huckster, and it's all about him, and it's all about making money and power. He doesn't care who he burns in order to make the money and get the power.
That's right. Yeah. When we look at, you know, you got some of the only civil liberties that most mainstream Republican voters care about is the Second Amendment. And yet, even there, where he did gun control by executive order, and now we've got Kamala Harris said she's going to do it. Now we've got Biden threatening to do it. Even there, and even where he, you know, initiated the red flag gun laws, even there, there's a blind spot with the MAGA crowd to see what Trump has done.
If Obama had done the same things, they would have been up in arms about it. But they're utterly silent when their beatified, spray-tanned leader does it.
That's right. And, you know, and I think that was a very calculated move on the part of the establishment, because when you look at how Fauci began His tenure at the NIH, he began by selling legal immunity for the vaccine companies in 1986 when Reagan was president. That's when they make sure that people don't pay any attention and give them a pass because, you know, hey, we got a free market guy here and he's, you know, on our side. And so they used Reagan to get immunity for the vaccine companies in 1986 in the United States. Fauci has now used Trump to get that done on really a global basis, because this whole thing, basically this model, has been pushed out first from China, but then now pushed out from the United States, since these U.S. pharmaceutical companies that are blackmailing and bullying other countries and saying, hey, you know, you're going to be an island. Everybody in your country is going to be locked down. Nobody's going to go in or out unless you get the vaccines. How do I get the vaccines? Well, first of all, you give me legal immunity.
Yep. I think that going forward in terms of political candidates, two things are important above all else. And the first one is principles, that they articulate principles. And the second is that they act in conformity with those principles. And if they do not, then that is a person that deserves no support.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You had an excellent op-ed piece about Kristi Noem at South Dakota and the speech that she gave at CPAC. I covered that on the broadcast. And you were absolutely right about what she said about the lockdown, all that kind of stuff. And then, within a week, she caved to the LGBT crowd over something as trivial as women's sports, which indicates that she doesn't understand what the Marxist fight is really here, right? I mean, the fight really is over our minds into getting us to live the lie, and she caved on that. Amazing.
This is a real problem, and it's again, a generational problem. The government schools have succeeded in stunting the conceptual faculty of many Americans who aren't dumb in an IQ sense, but they've never learned to reason logically in the way that was commonly understood back in the 18th century and even for some time thereafter, meaning be able to deduce, to infer, to use logic, to see what the underlying principle is, and then apply that to a particular thing. And that gives you an integrated conceptual whole view of the world and all the things in it, rather than looking at things as individual particulars that aren't connected to other things. That's how you lose, or rather, that's how you win if you're a Marxist, leftist, coercive collectivist.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Yeah, you have to understand what the actual tactic is, and you have to have the spine to stand up to them, especially at the core issue of all of this. Because if you can't oppose that insanity, how are you going to oppose the insanity of a medical bureaucracy that comes after you as a dictatorship, right? We have to understand their transcendent principles.
Plan is, all you can do is say that, well, my plan is a little more efficient than your plan.
Yep.
You know, no question about whether there should be a plan in the first place.
Yes, right. That's right. Yeah, and that's what we've seen. We've seen a government takeover of health care that is absolutely stunning. What we got with Trump Care is far worse than Obamacare, because Trump just said, well, you're going to shut down the, you know, the executive orders that were put out, you know, to incentivize this. You know, if you find somebody that's got COVID, we'll give you a $13,000 bonus. You put them on a ventilator, we'll give you another $39,000. If they're a COVID patient, we'll give you a 20 to 25% bonus on everything that you, you know, charge them for. So taking over the setting the priorities and then pushing out a vaccine and making it a coercive vaccine. I kept hearing from people when I said that this is the way this is going. Oh, no, it'll only happen if Biden wins. That's why we got to make sure that Biden doesn't win. I said, no, it's going to be done through the corporations. They already had the New England Journal of Medicine saying, we don't want to have a law. We want to do this through corporate coercion because we don't have any challenge to the due process.
That's right. Yeah, it's much easier to simply have these adjuncts of government that are not required to pass a law, that are not required to have judicial review over their corporate policies, impose these policies, which amounts to a de facto law.
That works
the same way.
And it's not even a stretch, because we just saw that happening with censorship. I mean, it's ongoing with censorship. We're not censoring. You know, this is the government. And we would never censor anybody. We would always have our sock puppets, who are private corporations, we'll have them do it, and then we'll say this is being done by private entities. So you know that that's how they're going to do the vaccine, how they're going to do the coercion. And I think you're talking about this being rolled out and how we are the diseased individuals, and we must be, you know, what we're going to have is we're going to have apartheid, we're going to have Jim Crow, we're going to have all of these, you know, the ghettos, all of this stuff is going to be recreated. I think it's going to start. I'm still holding my prediction it's going to be starting this fall, because they've got to wait until they have sufficient supply of vaccines, and then they'll start blaming us for not taking the vaccines. And I think they're going to get sufficient supply by early summer. By the fall, they'll say, see, this is why we can't have nice things, is because Eric and David won't take their vaccine. So we got to put them in.
Yeah, and there's another aspect to this that's even darker. I don't know whether you saw RFK's recent talk about the animal trials testing that had been done on some of these vaccines, and how the result was that, initially the ferrets, which is what they used to test the thing on, had developed a strong immunosuppressor or antibody response to one form of the virus. The problem was when they were exposed to other variants or wild variants, their immune systems collapsed.
Yes.
And they fell catastrophically ill and many of them died. So there is a very real possibility that these people who have gotten their vaccine, when they're exposed to something, whether it's another variant of the Rona or some other flu-like illness, they're going to be killed as a result of that. And there are going to be lots of bodies stacking up. And then, rather than pointing the finger at the pharmaceutical companies and the government, they're going to point the finger at people like you and I who are spreading the bacillus.
Yep, that's right. That's right. One of the things, I know we're starting to run out of time here. I want to ask you this, too, in terms of how things are back in Virginia. You know, one of the things that I really loved when I was back in North Carolina was going to the Blue Ridge Mountains, going to the public parks, driving through the mountains and things like that. But I've been told, I had a listener who sent me an email saying they refuse entry into Arlington Cemetery to visit the grave of a relative because they wouldn't wear a mask.
Right.
Have they locked down all the national parks around there? Or is it just the
ones
around Washington?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, I literally live 2 miles from the Blue Ridge Parkway, so I'm up there often, and there are not yet any barricades or armed government workers checking to see whether people are diapered up. But I do think that anything that is park ranger controlled, you know, anything that has an entrance egress point with a kiosk of some kind, probably places like Mount Vernon, for example, I doubt that you could get into that without putting on a face diaper.
Well, that's important to know. I'm going to have to... I'm going to have to take a trip before that gets completely cut out. I can't go to any of the places that I always thought I'd like to visit in foreign countries. I wanted to get to Ireland. I wanted to get to the Czech Republic, see the architecture that's the beautiful architecture. But I'll never fly again because of all this stuff. And I guess it's not going to be too long before I'll be excluded even from our own national parks. I can't fly domestically, but I don't like to fly anyway since September 11th.
No, nor I. I'll share with you, too, a personal anecdote before we, I guess, finish up our segment.
Sure.
And I've made my peace with the fact that I probably will never get to see my mother again.
Mm.
My mother has been imprisoned in a state-controlled care home now since this whole thing began.
Mm.
And I am certain that I will not be permitted to see her, even if they ever open the place up again, without putting on the face diaper, which I will not do.
Wow.
And I don't want to see my mother in a face diaper. And I know my mother, who has dementia now, has no ability to make decisions for herself.
Yeah.
But I know the woman, and she would never have put on a face diaper in her life. And I will not have in my mind the last image of my mother, a picture of her with a face diaper on. I won't have it. I'll remember her as she was.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that reminds me of an actor. Was it Lawrence Fox? Yeah, it was Fox, because Edward Fox's son. He is an actor. He's on the outs with the politically correct crowd. He's running for mayor of London. And Eric, you need to see his statement about that. That was one of the most moving things when he was talking about how we need to take our lives back. He said, we're not going to ever have a situation again where we have to say goodbye to loved ones over an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a tragic situation. And on the other end of that, I've had one story after the other of people, some of them listeners, who have contacted me talking about how their kids have been kidnapped because the mother or the baby tested positive for COVID, this ridiculous test.
That's right.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Or one of the custodial parents won't wear the face diaper, and then the other parent narcs them out to the CPS people who then take that, the failure to wear the diaper, as some kind of a threat to the kids.
Well, we just have to have the integrity and the fearlessness to stand up for this. I said this from the very beginning. I said on the Monday after the executive order from Trump, and then over the weekend you had California and New York lockdown, I said I could see this rolling out nationwide. And I said at the beginning of World War II, you had the classic signs, keep calm, carry on. You also had the other one, freedom is in peril, defend it with all your might. Churchill and the British people, when the Nazis were just across the small stretch of water, did not go running into their closets in fear. They faced them.
That's right.
We had the Alamo. We had people who knew they were going to be killed, but they fought for their freedom, and not just for their freedom. They fought for the freedom of their families, and we have to make that kind of determination. Unless freedom is important enough to us that we're willing to lose everything, including our life. I mean, if that was a biological weapon, I was willing to risk my life last year to not give up my freedom. That's how I knew where this was going. And we have to have that same determination. It doesn't matter what kind of things they do to us. We cannot allow them to win. This is too
important. That's exactly right. Yeah. And I'd close with, to those who are not familiar with it, Solzhenitsyn has an excellent quote that begins with how we burned in the camps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the quote goes on to talk about how when they were quivering in their apartments, dreading that knock on the door or hearing the knock on the door of their neighbor's apartment, how they wished they could have gone back in time and with whatever was at hand, a crowbar, a hammer, whatever it took to impose a cost on these tyrants before it was too late. We still have the freedom of action. Let's hope we don't end up in the camps pining for what we might have done.
That's right. Right. That's exactly it. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for joining us on the fight for freedom and for mobility. Eric Peters, EP Autos. Folks, you need to go to his website. If you're looking for a car, he has real-world reviews of cars. I mean, he's not most of the auto trade now. They're just talking about the few cars that are being made for the people like Bill Gates that cost $3 to $10 million. No, he's talking about real cars that you can still buy and perhaps afford. Plus, he's got excellent op-ed pieces about freedom that I think you'll find inspiring that you can share with other people to try to wake people up. EPAutos.com. Thank you so much, Eric. Appreciate that.
You bet, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I want to play for you in the little bit of time that we've got. I want to play for you how they're coming after our children. You know, we're talking about how the people at the Alamo, they knew they were all going to die, so they weren't really fighting for their freedom. They were fighting for the freedom of their children, right? Now they're coming after our children. As I pointed out yesterday, Fauci says he's going to start testing younger and younger children. They'll be sticking infants before long. They don't really care. They're looking at giving different doses to different children. They're doing experiments on them. This is Nazi experiments. I mean, even in Duke, twins, right? They probably gave them different doses to see what happened with these twins. Very valuable to these eugenicists, to these monsters like Joseph Mengele. And so they're experimenting with them mentally as well. It's not just the injection experiments. It's also what they're putting in their minds. And, you know, they've always focused on kids. People will talk a lot about, you know, Joe Camel and how it's a cartoon character selling cigarettes to kids. But I want to play for you first how the Flintstones were used to sell cigarettes to kids back in the day. And then I want to show you how Disney cartoons are being used to sell vaccines to kids today. First, Fred Flintstone.
They sure work hard, don't they, honey?
Yeah. I hate to see them work so hard.
Yeah, me too.
Let's go around back.
Well, we can't see them.
Gee, we ought to do something, Fred.
Okay. How's about taking that?
I got a better idea. Let's take a Winston break.
That's it! Winston is the one filter cigarette that delivers flavor 20 times a pack. Winston's got that filter blend.
Yeah, Fred. Filter blend makes the big taste difference, and only Winston has it up front where it counts. Here, ahead of the pure white filter, Winston packs rich tobacco specially selected and specially processed for good flavor in filter smoking.
Yeah, Bonnie, Winston tastes good like a cigarette.
Sure.
The Flintstone has been brought to you by Winston, America's best-selling, best-tasting filter cigarette.
It tastes good like a cigarette.
All right, and that's how they used to sell cigarettes to kids. Now they're going to sell the vaccines to kids, which may be far more dangerous. I mean, nobody died instantly, but we've had more than 2,000 Americans and more than 4,000 Europeans have died within a day or two of getting the vaccine. Many more seriously injured. We don't know how many are going to manifest symptoms within the next year, 2 years, 10 years. That's unknown. That hasn't been tested, of course. But this is the cynical way that they are pushing vaccines to children in the same way that they used to use cartoons to push cigarettes to children. The Lion King.
I'm gonna go get my vaccine and get back to my prime.
Well, I've never seen a vaccine made in quite so little time.
We're gonna plan insane events like we couldn't do before. Once everybody gets their shots, the 20s, they will roar!
Thus far, a rather uninspiring thing.
Oh, I just can't wait for vaccines!
Well, vaccines are completely unnatural. If you think
no more need to stay home.
Now, I did my own research.
No more isolation.
With a space person.
No more need for face masks.
Oh, it's all a bloody
with hope. Immunization.
Oh, wait, come on.
Free to socialize all day.
Well, I do that anyway.
No more COVID in our way.
Isn't that nice? Just can't wait to get a vaccine. It's going to be your passport, your ticket to freedom. Your ticket to a new normal, except it won't be normal, and your kids won't be normal if you allow them to be brainwashed like this. Now, that's not coming from Disney. That was done by a guy named Noah Lundquist. That could just be his own personal thing, but you wait for it. I mean, it's being done everywhere by the propagandists. They've got $250 million from the Ad Council. Maybe he was just making his opening bid. See, this is what I can do for you guys. You're going to see that. I guarantee you're going to see that done by Disney. You're going to see it done. It's already being done by Fox all the time. You watch Fox. Oh, they're selling you the vaccine round the clock, just like they sell you those other Ask Your Doctor pharmaceuticals. All right, well, that's it for the broadcast today. Thank you for joining us. I just want to remind you again, we have added Stitcher now. You can now find the podcast on Stitcher. We've added the video broadcast to Odyssey, as well as, that's odyse.com, as well as to Rumble. They join YouTube and BitChute. So look for the broadcast there. We'll be our website is still just a page with the links to where you can find the live stream, the podcast, the videos, and we'll be doing clips. So we'll have the clip that I had with Eric. All the interviews are cut out. We'll take some other topical clips. We have the full show up. We have to do it in three different sections on BitChute because it seems to choke the system if we put up a three-hour show without commercials on there. So we split that up by the hours. But on YouTube, we put up the full show, and I give you the topics by time code. So maybe that'll help. We also put that in later on the podcast. The podcast, we upload that first without the time codes because we want to get out as soon as possible, and then we add the time codes later. I don't know if that propagates through. The podcasts all propagate out of Podbean, and they go to iTunes, to TuneIn, to Stitcher, to Spreaker, to all these different places. Google even has an index on it. So it goes to a lot of different places. But that'll show you at The David Knight Show where you can support us on PayPal, links to PayPal. You can send PayPal contributions via the email address, davidknightshow at ProtonMail, as well as to Subscribestar. You'll find us there at The David Knight Show. And but you'll have direct links there, as well as direct links to Venmo, to Cash App, to Bitcoin, as well as our P.O. Box. Make sure if you go to those different ones, Venmo and Cash App, that you follow those links, because I think somebody tried to send us a contribution with Cash App via email. That doesn't work. You have to follow the links that are at The David Knight Show. And we hope to have that website up soon. We'll get back to doing news articles as well once we get that up. And that website, The David Knight Show, will eventually have the show running 24/7, as well as video, as well as audio format right there. So we'll also have the links to all the other places, but we'll make that available there as well. And all of that is possible because of your support and your contributions, and we really do appreciate your support. If you're not able to support us financially, please support us with your prayers. And either way, please pass the show along to other people. It's very difficult to get traction when we're kept off of YouTube. So even though we have all these different video sites, it's a few views that we get on each one of these sites. So it's very important, if you will, to pass that along. And you can still pass it along. The only one that is blocked by social media that I know of is BitChute, is blocked by Twitter. I can't even link to BitChute anymore on Twitter. But all the rest of the sites, so when I put it up on Twitter, I'll put it up from either YouTube, Rumble, or Odyssey, but can't put up BitChute. So just keep that in mind. If you want to share the video on social media, you might want to share it from one of those other sites. But that's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.